I'd like to welcome everybody out tonight at our RAT meeting, our Bucks and Bulls. I just hope everybody had a good hunt this fall, good hunts. Maybe if everybody did, everybody would be in a little better mood. So everything's pretty much status quo. So I'd like to welcome you out, and I'm going to have my RAC introduce herself, starting with Wayne, and we'll go around the table.
I'm Wayne McAllister, member at large.
Carrie Mayer, also member at large.
I'm Kirk Woodward, sportsman.
Brandon McDonald, BLM.
Floyd Burks, at large.
Floyd Blackwell, regional supervisor.
We was almost in a panic tonight. We was just about not to have enough on the draft to have a quorum, so we got lucky and everybody showed up what we needed. So with that, we'll go on. Has anybody had the chance to look at the agenda? Call for a motion to approve the agenda.
I make a motion we approve the agenda as written.
Second.
Approved by Wayne and second by Kerry. There was no changes, I guess, on that. And the minutes. Last meeting's minutes. Anybody had a chance to check the minutes? Mm-hmm. Call for a motion.
I'll make a motion. We approve the minutes.
Second.
And second by Kerry. Thank you. Old business. I don't have any old business. We didn't table anything. Regional update.
Thank you, Floyd. I've got a few things I'd like to go over tonight. First of all, there's been some questions about when we should talk about things, what we address, and whether this rack is the time for this, or that rack is the time for that. And so I just wanted to go over a couple of things. If folks will look on our website, www.wildlife.utah.gov, they can find the RAC schedule, and it's on there for the entire year, and then 2013 is even on there. And it goes over what the tentative agendas are. It tells them what we're basically going to be talking about, whether it's going to be hunt strategies, hunt areas, or season dates, and then when we talk about permit numbers. And I've been doing this for a long time, and it hasn't changed. We've for many years now, we've talked about permit numbers in April, hunt strategies and hunt boundaries and those kinds of things in November, which we are doing tonight. So I just wanted you guys to know that this is available, and let our public know that are here that we do have this. Also, they'll find that 2 to 3 weeks prior, Mark out of Salt Lake sends the announcements and the agendas out to the news outlets 2 to 3 weeks prior to the RAC meeting, so that everybody knows when, where, and what should be discussed at that time. And it's important that our public is able to address the right topics at the right time, because once we already have the season date set up, and then we move to permit numbers, and they try to put in a season or a boundary, it's already been decided the number of permits, where these permits are going to go, how many permits people are going to get. And so it's important that we keep that organized. The next thing I want to talk a little bit about.
Boyd, before you leave that,
yes?
Can you teach me? Say public has an idea about a hunt strategy,
mm-hmm,
that they would like to discuss in the RAC meetings. It's been my experience that somebody has a suggestion that might be a great suggestion, but then we say, well, we can't move on that. We can't do anything about that because it wasn't on the agenda. It wasn't here on the agenda. Even though this is the meeting to talk about,
right,
hunt strategies.
Yeah.
Tonight, if somebody comes up with a great idea out there, I've heard say several times, well, we can't make a motion because it wasn't on the printed agenda, so people didn't have time to think about it.
We can take public input on any idea or hunt strategy or recommended season date at this meeting.
Not season dates, right?
Season dates, not permit numbers.
So at this thing, we can take all the public input.
Yep.
How does that get passed on to the Wildlife Board? Educate me.
Well, what happens is we'll take input here. Floyd will get his notes. And then when we go through to the Wildlife Board, Floyd will say, okay, this was passed and this was passed, and we received input for this item here, but it's also in our minutes. And you can see we have, and it's also recorded, and all of this is sent to Salt Lake, and the Wildlife Board has the opportunity to see it and read it, every single one. And many times, the board member is here. He's not here today,
right.
He has to be excused, but that's basically how the Wildlife Board works.
I guess, I don't think I'm alone with that frustration that we get to this meeting and there are good ideas, And there's some concern about how to get those ideas either on the agenda or once we're here, how we actually get them heard.
Prior to the time we set the agenda for the RAT meeting, if people contact the RAT chair, then we'll talk about it and you can get it put on the agenda that way. We discussed this three meetings ago.
We did, and I still was unclear on exactly how we were going to get that on the agenda.
So that was what I was told.
And it worked best that way. If somebody does have something and they contact the RAT chair and say, listen, I'd like to discuss this, as long as it's not dealing with permits at the wrong time,
right,
or strategies at the wrong time, we can address it if it comes to the RAT chair. The RAT chair will contact Stacy or Gail or myself, and I can pass it on and have it added to the agenda.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
If I may, I can add a little bit too. If an idea, you know, isn't presented ahead of time and comes up at the RAC meeting, and if it pertains to the subject at hand, the RAC, if a member of the RAC thought it was worthwhile to move forward, they could make a motion that the board look at it or put it on the action log or whatever so the division could study it further. And then that way it would move forward as a motion.
Explain to me what the action log is.
So the action log are things, ideas that come up in these meetings. And basically they're things that we can't act upon right away because they have ramifications that are unknown at the time. So what the board usually asks us to do, they have this action log that's ongoing. And they ask us to look into these matters and see if they're feasible or not. And then we come back and report to them what our thoughts are, what the benefits, what maybe some drawbacks are. So that's a preferred way to do it if somebody just comes up to Iraq and didn't get ahead of time and comes up with a good idea that maybe one or two RAC members thought it was worthwhile to look into it further. That's another way to do it, is to basically make a motion that it be considered, and then the board usually will oblige by putting it on the action log.
Right.
So what we would do is we would look at it, and then we would come back to the board and say, you know, if the board thought it was worthwhile, we would first, you know, report to the board, because the action log is a board basically log. And then if we say, yeah, it's a good idea, you know, or even if they think it's a good idea, they will ask us to take it out to the public comment.
Thank
so
you.
It's kind of a year lag between good ideas and one that can be implemented, but there is that avenue, and I just want to make sure people know that.
I just wanted that to be clear, because in my experience over the last several years, good ideas sound great or sound like good ideas, but then they go nowhere. And so I just wanted to know and make sure everybody understood how to make their good ideas heard and how they go.
I appreciate that. I think that's important. We want our public input. We want to be able to discuss and talk about it, either as a RAC or as a Wildlife Board.
I mean, this is a public process,
right.
and it's been a frustration to me to not see it be a completely a public process.
One way I think that we could probably increase the amount of public input and the way it's utilized is by actually looking into Robert's Rules, because based on Robert's Rules, we could actually table information that should be presented at maybe the next RAC meeting or several before, and then that would actually be brought up under Robert's Rules under old business. That would be the old business section. It'd be required by Mr. Chairman to bring up that business in the subsequent meetings to find out if that was the correct meeting or not. At least that way we weren't losing that information. And it could be discussed as an actionable item under old business.
But the problem with that, Carrie, not wanting to drag it out, most of the information we get is on the action. And if you tabled information on an action, you've already passed.
No, it wouldn't be to table an actionable item that's already printed on the agenda, but an item that's brought to us from the public, we could table that information to be presented at a following
all
meeting.
Right. I understand.
And then move that as an actionable item onto the agenda.
Yeah. Okay.
Also, I just wanted to touch briefly on the deer hunt. We do have a little bit of information that hasn't been completely gone over yet, but just out of checking on our check stations, in 2011, we had a lot more deer checked in. 2012, we had more deer checked in than we did in 2011. And just an example that I know probably they're more interested in this area was at our strawberry check station. In 2011, they checked in 118 deer. In 2012, it was 180. So there was, and 30 were yearlings in 2011, and 42 in 2012. But overall, if you look at the check stations that we have here, whether it's Snowville, Logan, Pine View, Mountain Green, Spanish Fork, Nephi, and in the southeast region, all of those check stations were up in 2012 from 2011. So just a little bit of information there. On our some information on our fisheries, they completed their treatments of Middle Fork, a sheep creek here just late summer. And so that one's complete. The annual burbot netting at the Flaming Gorge is completed. In some areas, it's down, and the smallmouth numbers are up. But over on the Wyoming side, it was up. The burbot are up 61%. And in fact, there was a 6 to 7 pound range of several of the fish. So we're continuing to look at how to deal with the burbot, which compete with some of our other game fish. The aquatics biologists have wrapped up their work on the native aquatic section, and they're putting together their results and should have some information on that down the road. One thing that I thought was really cool this year was our kokanee egg take. We took over 500,000 eggs this year from one stream down here, and so we're going to be able to hatch out quite a few kokanee. Our fisheries have also worked a lot with our outreach section, getting people out on TV shows representing our region very nicely on Red Fleet, Starvation, and Gorge. We now have our signs up on the fishing pier out on the Gorge. Put in a special fishing pier that allows fishermen to get out there and to fish away from the shore. Our law enforcement folks have been busy working hard on what goes on this time of year. We've had a lot of our law enforcement out. They've been really, really busy. In fact, the only person I usually see anymore is Tori. And
that doesn't mean I'm not busy.
I left that open for you, Tori, to see.
Well, that's why I didn't jump in.
So, it's pretty good. Now, recently also, we have a retirement of Charlie Greenwood. We talked about this the last time. I want to
announce our new wildlife manager, and his name is Dax. He's sitting there at the back there, and he too would absolutely love to hear your ideas. If there's ideas, and we can talk about them. He and his biologist would love to hear them, and we can work those through, and we also, he also can pass that on to us, and I in turn can send it on to Floyd. As you may have heard also, Jim Karpowitz, our longtime director for the division, is retiring at the end of the month, and they've held interviews, but a new director was not announced at the time, and so we're still in limbo on who that's going to be, at least for a little while longer. We recently hired a predator specialist to work in the region that works at collecting coyotes, and we'll be working with nuisance cougar, bear, and some of our depredation issues. His name is Kyle Kettle. We've also hired a new walk-in access person, and he moved over from our habitat section, so we have an opening in our habitat section that'll be coming up, and that was Alex Hansen, and so we're happy that we have those folks in place, and other than that, well, along with that, everything's going well here in the region, and we're just happy to be here.
Thank you, Boyd.
I gave such a short one last time, I thought I'd lengthen it out for you this time.
Good deal. Anybody that wants to make a comment on our action items, they've got those comment cards out there on the table. You could fill one of them out and get them up here. We'll get everybody that wants to make a comment taken care of. With that, we'll move right along. Anise with Bucks and Bulls.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, my members. Tonight I'll be presenting the Bucks Bulls once in a lifetime season dates and any boundary changes or rule changes to that. To the big start a presentation with our deer hunt recommendations. I will preface this all these recommendations. Not a ton of changes to season dates this year. We basically just changed them to match the calendar. So most of the dates you'll see are just basically one day different from last year. Our general season deer hunt dates, the archery season will start August 17th and go through September 13th. The muzzleloader will be September 25th through October 3rd. And the any weapon season will be October 19th through the 27th. No major change from last year, just changing the calendar dates, basically. Elk is the same way. Our spike archery bull hunt, basically that one's a little bit different than the regular of in the any bull. And the reason for that, that ends 7 days earlier than the any bull. So it goes from August 17th through the 6th. The reason for that is you may be aware the limited entry hunt on those units is the same time as the spike bull hunt. So what this does is it gives those limited entry folks that took probably a while to draw that hunt the last 7 days of the season without interference by spike hunters. That's usually the time closest to the rut when the hunting should be the best for archery bull hunting. It also gives them 7 days, which guarantees them a weekend in that time period, no matter what the year is. Archery any bull season is August 17th through the 13th. That's the same as the archery deer hunt. The any weapon season is October 5th through the 17th. The muzzleloader is October 30th through November 7th. And the youth any bull hunt is September 14th through the 22nd. And then we have a late youth any bull hunt in this region. That's a fairly long one.
It's November 30th through January 15th. And that's usually, you know, a few permits, between 15 and 20 permits, basically to allow youth to harvest some of the bulls that are not accessible during the regular season, that spend most of the time on private land but do move off onto public land later in the year. Okay, some recommended changes. This is a statewide recommendation. So basically it would take a place on all general season units. We're recommending allowing youth to purchase an unlimited over-the-counter general season archery gear permit. This would be, these permits would become available if approved over-the-counter after the drawing has occurred. So any youth that, you know, was unlucky or unable to draw a general season tag could go and purchase a general season tag for whatever unit they may want to hunt. There was some concern when we initially floated this because of the unlimited portion of it. What seemed to calm those concerns from people that had them is that when we looked at the data from the last, not 2012, but 2010 and 11, we actually had 1,500 permits that went over the counter for youth, and they could hunt statewide, and only sold about 450. So even though there were 1,500 available, the demand just isn't there. As you know, it takes a lot to pick up a bow and go hunting. So it's not every youth that's going to take advantage of this. But we want to provide it just in case, you know, youth do want to take up archery and go hunting. This gives them that opportunity. Okay, some regional recommendations. The southern region is recommending changing the Fillmore Oak Creek South unit from limited entry to any bull. This is actually already passed. It came through this rack and all the racks, and then the Wildlife Board approved it when the unit plans came through. But we wanted to make sure the public was aware that change occurred, since this is the one where it goes into the guidebook. That's why we're bringing it out again. They're recommending that Fillmore Oak Creek unit has never been a very good limited entry unit. We've had, you know, satisfaction ratings on that from hunters have always been low. It's just a tough unit to manage for limited entry. There's lots of private land, and it's hard to get on the bulls where they may be. Similarly, the portion of the Beaver that's west of I-15 is fairly similar to the Oak Creek, and the region, when they did their unit plans, their committee decided to also move that from limited entry to any bull. So the main part of the Beaver unit east of I-15 will remain limited entry, but the portion that's west of I-15 will become any bull. And this also went through the RAC and board when we did our unit plans, but we're just making sure the public is aware. Okay, this is the southeastern region recommendations. These are all boundary changes. Most of them are minor changes just to make boundaries match between different species. I'll go ahead and read through them. They'd like to modify the Henry Mountains deer, elk, bighorn sheep hunts, and the Santa Rafael South pronghorn hunt boundary to exclude Capitol Reef National Park. We have a lot of boundaries that actually include national parks in the boundary because it's hard to carve them out. But in the description, we say excludes the national parks because national parks do not allow hunting on that. But this one was a little bit easy to exclude them because basically the road goes through the park that's currently the boundary, and it goes through just the eastern edge of the park. So by making the actual park boundary the boundary, it was easy to do, and the park actually asked us to do that. So this is one of the rare occasions where we're able to do something like that, and we did it just to make sure that folks are not hunting on the national park. They also would like to recommend modifying the Book Cliff South bighorn sheep pronghorn hunts boundaries to match the deer boundary. That's not a major change. It basically moves the boundary from the Green River about a quarter mile into a road, and that's just to carve out some mostly agricultural land in that, so those folks that own that agricultural land can hunt on a general season unit instead of being in the limited entry unit.
And similarly, they want to modify the Bookwoods Bitter Creek South Limited Entry Elk unit boundary to match the deer boundary. So that's the same change on that unit as well. And then because of that change, the unit next door, the 9 mile Range Creek unit, has to be changed to make that same change so we don't have a gap between the two units. They're recommending modifying the LaSalle Mountains and the San Juan Limited Entry Elk boundary to match the changes we've made to general season. There's a little portion in this southwest corner of the LaSalle unit. It's mainly desert country that doesn't have a lot of deer and elk, but occasionally we get a deer and elk in there. So that became part of the LaSalle Mountains. It used to be part of the San Juan, so both units had to be changed. And now they've, like, that was our, on, for deer, it was already done. They want to make the elk match that as well. And then lastly, in the southeast region, they want to modify the LaSalle Potash Bighorn Sheep and the LaSalle South Cisco Pronghorn boundaries so they're the same. These boundaries overlap quite a bit right now, but they're not exactly the same. So this makes them both the same and gives them both the same name. I think they'll be called the LaSalle Potash / South Cisco unit. Okay, the northern region is recommending changing the Pilot Mountain Limited Entry Elk boundary to include some private land where depredation is occurring. Currently, the boundary kind of hugs the base of the mountain, the Pilot Mountain. This extends it out a little ways into the flats and includes some of that private land where we're having some depredation issue. And the landowner has agreed to allow hunters to hunt that as well. So it's a win-win in that case. Recommending adding a premium limited entry elk hunt on the Cache Meadowville unit to make it consistent statewide. As you know, most of our limited entry units have a premium hunt on them. The premium hunt means that you can hunt all the weapon types and seasons on that unit. The Meadowville didn't have one, probably a relic from when we didn't have enough permits on that unit, but now that we do, we'd like to have all the weapon types on. They're recommending a bighorn sheep hunt on the Pilot Mountains for 2013 for our agreement with Nevada. Basically, the Pilot Mountains, for those of you that are unaware, straddles the boundary between Nevada and Utah. And for elk, we actually allow both states to hunt both sides. So they have to hunt at the same time. And then the Utah hunters can hunt into Nevada, and the Nevada hunters can hunt into Utah. So this is the same way. But because sheep numbers are not as high as elk numbers, in the past we usually only had enough to have one permit, and we've usually gone back and forth. One year we would have it, one year Nevada would have it. Last year Nevada had the permit, but this year when they flew it, there was enough sheep there to actually issue two permits. So we'll have one on our side, and they'll have one on their side, and both hunters can hunt both sides of the boundary. They're recommending allowing harvest of either sex deer on the Ogden Extended Archery Unit to be consistent statewide. That unit, a while back, changed it from either sex to buck only, but they're seeing quite a few deer in town, in the towns along that front, and they decided to go back to the either sex hunt to try to maybe harvest a few more does on those, on that area, and to be consistent statewide. They also want to clarify the boundary description, that this is on the cache unit, to inform hunters that the posted area around the meadow and hardware ranch WMA is close to hunting. That's always been close to hunting, and it's always been posted, but it never said anything in the boundary description about it. So people had to basically happen on the posting to know it. This will kind of explain to folks that this is posted, and it's because of the feed value. Central region, some of the recommendations in this one also affect the northeastern region. It was easier just to lump them into one instead of having one separate for the northeast. And the first one there is the one that will affect the northeast region. So they're recommending adding a late any weapon limited entry elk hunt on the Wasatch, Nebo, and Deep Creek units to reduce crowding. Those units used to have that late hunt, but we did away with them because the harvest success was almost identical to the rut hunt. So at that point, we didn't have a lot of permits on these units, so it made sense to just leave one hunt and have all the hunters hunt in that one time frame instead of splitting them out. But now that we're starting to see quite a few permits on all of these units, it makes sense to split it back out and basically reduce hunter crowding on those units. I don't imagine it's going to change harvest a whole lot, but it will reduce, it will increase the, you know, the satisfaction on that hunt. There'll be fewer hunters out on each hunt. So the Wasatch unit obviously is shared by the Northeast region and the Central region. And then we're recommending adding a premium limited entry elk hunt on the Deep Creek unit. Again, that's similar to the one I just mentioned in the Northern region. It didn't have one in the past, probably an artifact of not having enough permits, but now they do have enough permits to have a premium limited entry elk hunt. We'd like to add that to be consistent with the other units statewide. This year, in 2013, we're recommending a mountain goat hunt on the Nebo unit. This has been a long time coming. The division's wanted to have mountain goats on Nebo for a long time, and now they've made it there. We were never able to really put them out there just because the Forest Service was always opposed to putting them, actually transplanting them there, but they made it there on their own, and now we can actually have a hunt there. About half the population is on Mount Nebo itself, and half is on Loafer Mountain, which is a little bit north of there. But the Nebo unit includes both. And then they're recommending discontinuing a late doe-only hunt on the Wasatch Front Extended Archery Area to be consistent with the Ogden unit. Basically, both the Ogden and the Wasatch have a season that goes to the end of November, but on the Wasatch, it was a December 1st to the 15th, a doe-only hunt. They decided to get rid of that since they are hunting either sex all through that time and then just shorten the season and be consistent statewide. Okay, some key date changes or key dates for 2013, really not changes, just information. The big game drawing for bucks and bulls once in a lifetime and new dedicated hunter applications. The period will be February 1st through March 4th. Those applicants that either want to put in for a preference point or a bonus point or withdraw an application have till March 11th to do so. They have that entire period, February 1st through March 11th, but it extends it a little bit for those folks that just want a point or want to withdraw their application. And the new results should be posted by May 31st. Lifetime license questionnaire and unit selection deadline. Since last year was the first year of unit by unit, we actually asked all of them to submit a questionnaire. This year, now that we have their unit of preference, they'll automatically get that unit unless we hear from them. And if they do want to change the unit, they have to have that questionnaire to us by March 4th, 2013. And those lifetime license holders that do not send us a questionnaire and did not hunt in 2012, we basically have to see what's left over after the drawing is done to get whatever permit they need. Shed antler and shed horn season dates. If you were going to gather shed antlers or horns during the period of February 1st through April 15th, you need to go online and complete a course and get a certificate. If you do it any other time outside of that, you do not need that certificate. There are dates when hunters can purchase or sell big game or their parts. This hasn't changed either. Antlers, heads, horns, and legally taken big game may be bought or sold February 15th. Maybe bought or sold February 15th through July 31st. Obviously, that's outside the hunting season. The rationale for that is they don't want people out there, you know, hunting big heads and trying to sell them during the season. Inversely, untanned hides and legally taken big game may be bought or sold August 1st to February 14th. That's made on purpose during the hunting season, because that's when most hunt and trade of those skins would be most feasible when you're taking the animals. Okay, some disabled hunter, general season hunt extension dates. Again, these haven't changed from last year. We just moved them by one day to adjust for the calendar. So these are dates when folks that are disabled and get a COR from us by proving that they're permanently disabled from what a doctor's note can actually have extensions on our general deer hunts. And some of the extensions are preseason and some are postseason, as you can see up there. So the archery one is a preseason. It goes from August 12th through the 16th. The muzzleloader goes from September 20th through the 24th. The any weapon goes from October 14th through the 18th. And then the archery elk is the same as the deer, August 12th through the 16th. The muzzleloader any bull elk is the November 8th through the 13th. And the any weapon any bull elk is September 14th through the 22nd. And they can also hunt during that late season here in the northeast region at the same time they use it up here. The muzzleloader spike elk, November 11th through the 15th. And then the any weapon spike elk, October 18th through the 22nd. And that concludes my presentation. I thank you for your attention.
Catch the lights. Denise, I got a question for you.
Sure.
On the draw results, on the dates on that, that's 2 months after the last.
Correct.
Is there any possible way that could be moved up?
There isn't. And the reason for that is we don't set permits until the April, May time frame. So pretty much the day the permits are approved by the board, almost immediately the drawing takes place and we, so it's a pretty quick turnaround.
I don't know how the rest of the board feels, how the public feels, but myself, I'd like to know a little earlier than the end of May whether I drew a tag or not.
Well, technically you're saying it's your fault, but we don't know about it anyway. It's got to go through the rack and the board before, and they've got to approve the application or the permit numbers before they can release permits. So we would have to move that meeting.
But the only it's not the meeting, it's the data that
Right. So we can't make recommendations on permit numbers until we get all the harvest data. And we don't get the harvest data until, you know, we get it. And then by that time, put it together, go through the rack process. That's the earliest we could ever have the drawing results. I mean, we've gone the rounds with this, I don't know how many times people wanted it earlier. And it's just, you know,
it makes sense that it'd be easier.
Yeah, I mean, we would love to have it earlier, but to have it earlier, the rack would have to use a year old harvest date, which a lot of people are not comfortable doing.
Okay, questions from the rack?
Yes, regarding the unlimited over-the-counter archery permits for the youth. Is that going to be in addition to a requirement to take an archery education course?
No.
Why?
We don't currently require it for any archers, any youth archers.
It would absolutely be my suggestion that that is implemented into the hunter safety program 100%, regardless. At least the ethics course that's currently required when you're hunting extended, I think that there's absolutely no reason that at least that part is implemented into the hunter safety program before we release all these kids with bows.
Right, I agree with you, but there's probably already three times that number hunting with archery that would outside of what would take advantage of this.
Mm-hmm.
So unless you make every youth have to take
what about every archery hunter period?
Yeah, and again, that's a great idea, and I think that's been suggested, and I think the folks in law enforcement have presented something to this RAC, not maybe the specific RAC, but to the RACs and board on why, you know, certain things are the way they are.
I've received some information in the past, and maybe this is just so the board will happen to hear it, but I've received some information from several sportsmen's groups who not only stand behind it, but have offered to fund the addition of that information packet to the hunter education system. So whatever needs to happen in order for that to be implemented, I think that that's vital in order for us to release an unlimited amount to the youth. And I think that's nothing but wonderful, get more people involved and get them out there. But I also think that there's a major ethical implication with archery hunters having a bad name that needs to be addressed. And that's going to be based on education. So
That's a good suggestion.
So once again, Kirk? That's a good suggestion. Where does it go from here?
If I remember rightly, we brought this up at the last rat meeting. So maybe now
this
would be the time.
This is an actionable item, though. What if we voted on that with the inclusion that a hunter safety system or hunter education system is required for that to pass through the board? That would be our recommendation.
When you make your motion, put that in the form of the motion.
One way or the other, it would be a way to get it directly to the board as an actionable item.
Yeah, it doesn't preclude you from acting on it just because the other racks haven't seen it, or it's just a way to get your whatever you want put forward to the board.
What?
What I've seen in the past is when a recommendation has come from a rack that hasn't gone all the way around, oftentimes those are the things that end up on the action log. Where I put it on the action log and say, division, take a look at this, address it, and see what you can do about it. And then the division, they will give them a deadline. The division will have to report back to the wildlife board on that. And then the wildlife board will say, may say, take it to the racks and let's do it.
So, again, teach me, educate me. We could pass everything that Nice just gave us, and we could suggest that the Wildlife Board look at implementing an archery ethics course for all archers. And so we wouldn't have to include that in your motion to pass his
everything that's presented. It would just be in addition to.
Because in the past, I think we've got bogged down in trying to add things to make them coincide with Robert's rules so we add that to this actionable item, and then it bogs things down because we're all trying to think through the implications of that, where if we pass that everything and then you made a proposal that we push that onto the board, mm-hmm. that makes it more simple, right? Thank you.
And either way, I think it would be, it's whether it's a separate motion or a motion included, it would be to the board, so they would hear that motion at the board meeting.
Mr. Chairman, can I ask another question?
Sure.
What, maybe this is Boyd or Tory, what implications, if we start messing with laws, because that would be a law change, right, that all archers would have to have an archery ethics course, is that something that could happen that quickly?
If it's a law, if we're going to require it to be called,
it would be an adjunct to an existing law.
Yeah, but you could add it.
Yeah, laws have to go through the legislature. So
technically, that's not a law, though. All that would be is a change in the course material for hunter education.
The same as when we required trappers to take a trapper identification course.
Mm-hmm.
That's law, that's code. So it has to go through. And
so you're proposing to add it to hunter education, but there are a lot of hunters out there that are still youth that have already had their hunter education.
Hunter ed does currently have an archery component to it and an ethics component to it. So all these kids have already had hunter ed, so they have to have that.
There is
a separate archery course.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That it's not mandatory, but we do provide it. But to make it mandatory would require...
It is mandatory for the extended season, though,
it's
correct?
No, that's not.
That's the ethics course that's online.
Yeah.
And that's really all it does is go through and see...
So it would be law, then it would be coaching.
It's just behavior.
The archery course is also online, and you could choose to take it.
Right,
yeah. Well.
Okay, I think we ought to move along.
Yep.
Other questions?
One more, sorry, and this is to throw it in here because it's the only time and the only place that it's going to come up, but there's a system or a program that's actually gone through the leadership team meetings with the division that I'm very, very surprised was not proposed at this rack, and it's called the tag-along system, and this is going to be more for your information than anything, and you're going to be interested in this. It's also another youth program, that's been discussed, and what it would essentially mean is that for every adult tag that has been dispersed in the state of Utah, you are able to purchase one tag for, or subsequent tags, multiple tags for a youth hunter to go along with you. And what that would mean for the youth hunter is that they carry a tag in their pocket and can use the weapon that has been legally assigned to you to shoot the animal for you. And what that does is provides opportunity. There would be some legal aspects of that that would require you to be within vocal range of the youth hunter or something along those lines. But not only does it create revenue, it creates opportunity. And I'm disappointed that it didn't come through this rack, but it needs to be discussed, needs to be brought up somewhere.
I can explain that. That was brought up and it was discussed, and we were going to present it at this rack, except what we found out is it has to be a lottery. So because it's a transfer of tag, and right now it's illegal to transfer a permit from one individual to another. So the way we are approaching it, it is something we are pursuing. We will have it as an informational item at the Wildlife Board work session to basically get their buy-off for us to run it in the legislature as a rule change for transfer.
And then it'll go through the racks.
Next year.
So, beautiful.
So you're going to present that?
Our law enforcement folks are.
That'll give you plenty of time, Kurt, to study it.
Well, so we don't have to. She doesn't have to make the suggestion.
No, I mean, that's already something
that's
we're
already
working
going
on.
Through.
Yeah,
excellent.
I mean, it's a great idea.
Yeah.
We were going to present it at this RAC meeting, but we when we went through our lawyers and all that, and they said, no, it's a law change. We have to run it through the legislature. But first, we wanted to make the board aware of it because it's not going to go through the RAC process. So we're doing it at our work session the day before the board meeting in December. They can't act on it, but if we, you know, see that they're behind it and we don't see any red flags there, we'll pursue it. And then, again, once it's in law, then we can bring it to the RAC and make it in the rule, because that's the only way we can do it.
That's great news. I'm really happy to hear an update on that.
Once it's in law, though, then it's just, I mean, there's no other...
No, I mean, there's lots of things in law that are not in our rule, but it has to be legal first so we can do it in...
Yeah. Let's get it back to things at hand. Any other questions? Questions from the audience? Come up to the mic and state your name, please.
My name's Travis Mold, and I wasn't aware of what was on the agenda according to the sales of wildlife antlers. Can you explain that to me, where you had a season or a date set in place where this week would sell those items, and why you went to that event in the season?
Actually, that isn't anything new. Those dates have been around since there has been a proclamation, so it's not new. Those are the dates when you can legally sell those items. So I'm not sure what exactly the question is.
The reason why?
I wasn't aware that there was a season on selling those items. And we make part of our living off of making antler chandeliers and lighting and things like that. And it was never brought to my attention. Now, when we get orders to come in for chandeliers and lighting items like that, we have to seek those antlers out during the year to make
I'll explain that.
So once those items become either furniture or taxidermy, they no longer fit under this. So this doesn't exclude you from doing it. So you're using mostly shed antlers, those don't include in that. It's basically antlers that are attached to the skull's right, and they're not taxidermy or made into any kind.
No other questions. Do we have any comment cards from the audience? Comments from Murat? No comments?
Mm-hmm.
Call for a motion.
Well,
you were a little late.
I said, as
said that I like the view of archery. I had a question about that at first, but anyway, I like that. Plus, the tag loss is not that one. It's the goals that might be easy to know. They have something for the archery that I was going to ask me. Would it be possible? I think in the surveys, when they call people on the surveys, would it be possible to have a question? I don't know if they.
Yeah, we're actually going to survey them separately so we know exactly what their effect on harvest is so we can better manage whether we can continue to make them unlimited or whether we need to rein them back. It's definitely something we're going to watch closely.
Any other comments? Call for a motion.
I'll move that we accept it as proposed.
Okay. All those in favor? Show by raising your hand.
When, no, I believe that would have to have been along the original.
No, I think that's what we just talked about. You can now make the motion that they put your idea on the action log of the wildlife board.
Mr. Chair, is that the correct way to go about doing
that? That's what we just asked. That's what we just asked went through just a minute ago.
Okay, so I would like to make a motion to request the Wildlife Board to add, in addition to unlimited archery tags for the youth, that they also require a archery ethics course for the state of Utah, for all archery men.
Just for the clarification, since you
is it the ethics course, or do you want to take the archery education course?
Both.
They're two different things.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Both. Okay. Possibly combined into one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All hunter ed courses have an ethics portion too. So.
And that's Gary Moore made that specific. You know, outside of hunter education curriculum as it stands now.
Well, and I think what we ran into in that, and we should probably clarify that, is there's people who have already been through the hunter education system who are currently hunting, and I think it should be required for all hunters to take the ethics course in addition to maybe an updated archery course. I know that information is not very up-to-date.
You're talking no matter
nine
how
different directions. Where you
I don't like taking courses. Okay, we have that in the form of a motion.
Yes, sir.
Do I have a second on the motion?
I'm not sure I understood the motion.
Okay, let's clean it up a little bit. Let's find the right wording for that. Does it have to be in addition to?
You have Gail read that motion as well.
Oh, I don't know if I want to hear it. It sounded scary coming out of my mouth.
What would the course have to offer that we haven't already went through as far as hunter's education?
There's a specific archery ethics course that is required. It's not required, that's offered. Maybe that particular course should be required for all archery hunters. In addition to, why is it that you don't have to shoot a bow the same way you have to shoot a gun in the hunter safety course? Does anybody know?
It just comes down to the number. You know, you can only require now is a 22, right?
Correct.
But you know, you can expand that and say you've got to shoot a 270, you've got to shoot a muzzleloader, you've got to shoot a flintlock. Somewhere you have to draw the line. And so that's, we require them to shoot, show proficiency with only a 22. And then hopefully they're going out with their mentor, their parent, grandparent, friend, family.
In an attempt to understand accuracy and precision.
And also, I might say, in order to shoot archery, it takes a lot more preparation and practice than it does with a rifle. So if you're an ethical hunter, you're not going to pick up a bow and go out the week of or whatever like you can a rifle.
I think you would be surprised, Floyd.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised because I've seen it.
And that's what I'm trying to avoid here. I think
if
that's what
the
misconception is.
In the form of youth.
So I think it'd clean up and it'd probably go better if you just say youth needs to do the
archery ethics course. Okay, I would like to move that the Wildlife Board accepts, in addition to unlimited archery general season deer permits, a requirement to take an archery ethics course for the youth.
For the youth. Because that's what they're changing. I think that's a good.
What's that?
Yeah.
I can't hear you. Ethics. Archery ethics.
Just all archery?
All archery.
It's all archers in the extended areas. They have to take that online ethics course.
Right. Yes, I think that the youth should be required to take that anyway.
And it goes through, you know, have you got permission to go on public lands? Have you got permission to go to private lands? Permission slips, et cetera, et cetera.
It also talks about distance, projection, things like that. Is it ethical to take a 200-yard shot? I mean, which, you know, if a kid's going to pull a shot on 200 yards, he's not going to hit anything anyway, but that's not
okay.
The point. What if
that was in the form of a motion?
Yes, sir.
Do I have a second? Motion fails because...
I'll second.
Right in time.
All we're doing is asking.
Yeah, all we're doing is asking to look at it.
Yeah. All in favor? Show by raised hand.
All those opposed? Would you read that motion back? Because I'm not sure that I heard him test to look at it. I heard it was to tell him to do it.
Which would require them to put it on the action log to look at it, right? Because they can't act on this.
Well,
I'm sure if they hear it, they like it, they'll put it on the action log. All right. CWMU management plans print. Scott?
Floyd, before we move on to the next thing, I'm sorry. I know there's some public that have concerns about boundary changes, about some ideas that go along with what Anish just presented. It's not necessarily something that's actionable tonight, but we didn't have comment cards up there in that topic.
No comment cards, but
Well, no, I think because it's on this topic that we're leaving right now. Because now we're moving on to permit numbers I guess it could be on this one too. Because I've had several public call me and talk about some specific things. I guess again, I don't want to have this public process be frustrated by not being in the right time at the right place.
Scott, you might back up just a little bit. Agenda topic, deer hunting. All deer should be considered the same and will give more opportunity.
I think in a nutshell, that one specific, and again, I've had several phone calls tonight, and that's why I was concerned we didn't have comment cards, but there's a proposal there to discuss how we distribute tags, basically. And I guess that can be on this.
Well, when we
permit
do permit numbers, that will be in a different rack.
Well, right.
We're working on season dates and the rule changes.
And I guess this would be a rule change, is what they were proposing. And so that's why
okay.
I didn't want to move on until we had heard from them.
I guess I think we should do is have Lance Hadlock come up and give us his idea.
My name's Lance Hadlock. I would I would like the RAC and the board to look at proposing that the deer be categorized as deer. I don't know why we have general season deer, limited entry deer, and premium deer. A deer tag in the state of Utah should all be in the same category, and it should cost a resident the same price. I think that the division might be concerned, well, that's going to cut revenue because those limited entry and premium tags cost more, but a minimum $5 increase on what we call a general deer tag now, there's so many more of those that I think that would more than make up that difference. And I would propose that if you apply for, say you put it into the Henry Diamonds for your first choice and you don't draw it, you still get your bonus point, but you've got a second, third, fourth choice, and if you are able to draw one of those tags, you don't lose your points. So you can continue to put in for the Henry Mountains, the book list, whatever better quality hunts we have in the state, and still possibly be able to hunt. You might not get a hunt, a southern region deer tag with a rifle that are still a pretty good hunt, but a muzzleloader or an archery tag as a second choice in some of these other units, or third or fourth choice, would be a very real possibility. This year we even had leftovers after all those choices on some of the so-called general units. What I think this will do is it'll give more opportunity. Because there are people that consider themselves trophy hunters, they want to hunt bigger deer and are willing to do it less often. And then there's the people that want to hunt every year and they're not concerned about size. If you take the guy that's got 15 points for the Henry Mountains, but is also putting in as a first choice for a rifle deer tag in a unit that's got more applicants than they give rifle tags, then that's taking opportunity away from somebody who wants to hunt. And basically giving a bonus to the guy that wants to wait for that Henry Mountains tag. He will still probably be able to draw a second or third choice. It might not be a rifle tag, it might be archery, it might be muzzle loader, might not be in the best room in the state, but he can gain points, and he can still hunt in most cases. And that person that wants to hunt those medium-tier units will have a better opportunity to draw on their first choice. One thing I think it might change, it might take a few years to get to that point, but I think it'll help the point creep and the longer wait we've got for some of those better hunts. If you take some of those people and say, you make a choice, you want to hunt the book list or you want to hunt the South Slope. If they've got very many points, they're probably going to hold out for the book list, but after 4 or 5 years, it's going to get to the point that the guy that's only got 1 point or no points, well, I want to hunt, he's going to put him up here. And he's going to draw, and it's going to take a few people out of that first choice category on the book list for the Henrys and make those tags more accessible. Maybe instead of every 10 years, you might draw every 5 or 6. Another possibility to give this opportunity to more people, the guy that wants the premium, better, bigger buck hunt, possibly a late muzzleloader hunt like they used to have for deer. And I wouldn't say give hundreds of tags, maybe 3% of what they're giving right now in the muzzleloader hunt. Book list, I think they give 104 muzzleloader deer tags, so 3% of that, 3 guys, which I can guarantee you there's going to be a lot of guys that want to hunt that, and it's going to take them out of other point pools because they're willing to wait for that hunt. It might take them a long time to draw it, but it's going to take them away from hunts that they would be hunting if that wasn't there, and give somebody else the opportunity to hunt that if they're willing to wait for it. Another thing that the division could look at to do that, to spread people out and give more opportunity, is like we do on the premium hunt. It's got to be harder to draw. And again, a small percent, maybe 1% of the total tags. So again, if you look at the book list, they give 400 or 500 tags. You have 4 or 5 tags, a premium hunt. If you draw that tag, then you have archery, muzzleloader, and rifle. And it's definitely going to take you a lot longer to draw that than if you just put in for the archery or the rifle tag out there. But because you have more seasons, you'll have a better opportunity for a larger buck, and the guy that wants that will wait for it. And the guy that wants to hunt more, or the kid, or the woman, whoever it is, that wants to hunt more, will have more of a chance because it's going to take people out and spread them out. There's going to be, we've always kind of done it with having an archery, muzzleloader, and rifle, specify your unit, specify your weapon, but that would do it even more if we spread it out even more, some extra hunts, and put all hunts together. I don't see why a Henry Mountain deer is valued more than a South Slope Burley Diamond Mountain deer. It shouldn't cost any more. They're both there. They're both in the state of Utah. We're all public. It's not fair to the public. The residents of Utah already pay more than residents in pretty much any state. It's not fair for the residents to have to pay multiple prices. I own and operate Mountain Man Taxidermy, and I talk to non-residents a lot, and they ask me what it costs for an elk tag, and when I tell them that there's like 10 different prices for a resident, what? And some of the prices that I tell them, well, for the book list, if I draw the premium tag of the book list, it's going to cost me $500. And I'm like, well, I just came and bought a non-resident tag, and it didn't cost me that much, and a resident has to pay that much, and it just... It's not fair. I think it should be done with everything, but at least with the deer. A deer is a deer. Elks, it's over-the-counter or limited entry, so straw. But deer, why do we have different categories of deer? And I just propose that the division would look at that. It would make it more fair. It would give more opportunity. The people that want maybe a better quality hunt for size are going to pick those better dates or better units, and the people that want more opportunity are going to pick the ones that have more tags and are easier to draw, and it'll spread things out and make it more fair.
Okay. Thank you, Vance. Do I have any comments on that?
I thought did something like that.
I would too, and I would.
Which is, if it's not going to make them mad or make them happy, and it's getting to the point that sooner or later there will be too many left. But it would be if you've got a lifetime license, you've got to apply, just like me. You're not going to pay for it because you paid your money. But if you apply and put your name in that group and draw your Henry's tag, then here it is, George.
Negative, boss. I have a lifetime license, and here's how that works. I get a tag where I apply on general season, period. And if you...
Well,
and I'm with you on this.
No.
Because I think you're fighting a good fight. Because I'm on your side. I'm 100% pro-opportunity. You got to understand what these guys are trying to do is walk a really fine line between people like you and I who are pro-opportunity and are just fine with shooting a two-point. That's a trophy every day of the week. And people who need desperately to shoot a big monster muley, that's their lifetime dream. And they have the right to feel that way the same way you and I have the right to feel the way that we do.
And that's fine.
But you're contradicting yourself just a little bit on this. And I'm just going to say that because I think everyone's kind of feeling the same way. You're saying you don't want deer to be classified as premium limited entry in general, but the units are. And the deer that reside within those units are classified as such because they're in units that have higher population number, higher buck to doe ratio, and a higher appeal to the hunters. So we're walking a really fine line between making half of the people really, really mad and half of the people just kind of mad. And there's really no way to make everybody happy
this. You can't do anything in the state without making a lot of people mad and a lot of people mad.
And I agree that the monetary value that's placed is very sad. And I'm with you. Get with me after, and we'll talk about it a little.
The lifetime thing, if they don't draw the Henrys as their first choice, they're probably going to draw a second choice. And if they don't draw their first choice, I think they should have the opportunity, basically whatever went second choice the previous year. If it's something you can draw second choice, then that's it.
Well, we generally limit your comments to 3 minutes. We put enough time in this, but I don't remember seeing you at any of the meetings when we was going through the change in the deer regulation.
I've been to every meeting, but honestly,
I've been to
every meeting for the last 3 years, but honestly, I've not seen anything
like this
because nothing
come up.
Ever happens. You know, there was comments by a couple friends and family of mine at the last meeting, and they're all shut up and sit down and come to the next meeting. We'll listen to your comments.
Yeah.
I'm here at the fall meeting. You guys can listen, and you never do. You just throw it away every time.
I'm not saying I didn't listen. I just just thinking about the Michael license you said we have to figure out.
Yeah, you have to figure, and obviously, yeah, they're going to want the Henry, but that's not fair. You've got to do something. There's got to be a happy medium. You've got to make it in the middle. But
well, I'm not saying that I disagree because I more or less agree with it. But to make a change like this in the meeting tonight, or make a suggestion.
Well, no, they can't change that. I'd like to get out there so maybe by next year the board can look at it and it can be on the action plan and people can actually consider.
I could go along with that.
I would bet you I talked to more hunters than anybody in this room, except for maybe some of the officers within the field.
Yeah, I'm sure you do.
And the people I talked to, most of them agree that why do we have different deer categories? Why do I get to put in for this kind of deer and this kind of deer?
But you talk to a different class of hunter than I do, because I'm a landowner that has a lot of deer. You talk to the people that are bringing in trophies.
I see a lot of people out of the older. I have a lot of stuff like this. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mount stuff from giants to tiny stuff, and yeah. I see people kill giants that come in and say, "It's not worth doing anything with it. We'll buy my cape."
The point is, though, so we don't have to draw this out in arguments, the point is he's made a suggestion that I'm not sure, I'd like to hear from Anise and maybe some others, some downsides to this, but from what he just suggested, he makes trophy hunters happy, and he makes people who have, lifetime license, absolutely, there's some, we're going to have to figure that out.
There's got to be some issues.
But there's... That gives those who want to put in for those units and spend the time, the opportunity to do that, and maybe make it a little less time that we have to spend to draw Henry's tag.
I don't disagree with you, but I think we're spinning our wheels. Because we already went from a buck-to-doe ratio of 18. What did we do? We bumped it back.
Right.
We bumped the buck-to-doe ratio back.
Right. But that won't have... All this does is change the way you apply to those units. It doesn't change the units, it doesn't change the buck-to-doe ratio, it just changes the way that people apply, if I'm understanding it right.
Yeah, the management system, buck-to-doe ratios, everything that they've changed recently,
so
it doesn't change, they've got all those different tables that you apply for in the pocket. It should all be in one group, all should cost one price, and your points are deer points, not
so,
this kind and that kind.
So to summarize, if I put in this year, I could put in my first choice, Diamond Mountain, and my second choice, South Slope. And I may not draw my Diamond Mountain tag, but for a second choice, I could draw South Slope, and it wouldn't take away my points. I could still have the opportunity to hunt, maybe, if I didn't have all those people in front of me as that their first choice. Am I right?
Yep.
So now I'm still trying for that trophy unit, but giving myself opportunity to hunt as a second choice or a third choice. I'm not sure I see a downside to this. Financially, that's something, you know, what you're saying, a deer's a deer, you know, that's a kind of a different issue of how much we're going to charge when we draw that Diamond Mountain tag versus drawing the South Slope tag. But the idea that he's saying, I think, is sound, because it's giving people still opportunity and ability to still put in for what we're calling limited entry or premium units. But still, you know, right now, I put in for the Henrys, and then as a second choice, I'd get a general tag in a specific unit. This would force me to just put in as a first choice, second choice, third choice, however many choices we do. I'm not sure I see a downside to this. Maybe Anise can help with that. Do you see a downside to this?
Chairs, too many?
Let's hear it. Well, I mean, we need to, don't we, to make a proposal. It's Jeremy.
Sure, that's... So yeah, this is nothing new.
Right.
We've considered this many times.
Doesn't Colorado do something like this?
They do. But here's where the difference is. We currently do have general season, and we do have limited entry season. General seasons have preference points.
limited entry season have bonus points. If you went through this kind of system, you could not transfer preference points to bonus points, and it's a totally different system, because preference points is basically based on, you know, everybody has the same. When you add points, you have more of a preference. For bonus points, right now our system is half
go to the ones
at the highest and all that. So right. That would have to be worked out, and that's very complicated. Taking people's points away and putting them in another is going to be a nightmare, because there's legal issues. You don't really own the points, because anyway, that part of it would be a nightmare. But let's say we got beyond that, and we went to this system, it would not increase opportunity. Because if the people who have more than 3 points, let's say, are always going to put whatever unit they want to hunt limited entry as their first choice, and whatever anything else is, they'll hunt every year like they do now on their second or third or fourth or fifth choice, but they'll still maintain their points because they'll put whatever limited entry unit they want. What is now limited entry will be...
You don't think somebody's going to say, well, I've got 8 points, I can draw the Diamond Mountain tag right now.
Right.
And so I'll switch that.
Well, but it's still Diamond Mountain's limited entry. So they'll change
this
to a
system,
different limited entry.
If I understood him right, this system would be, everything's limited.
Right. But I'm just saying the units, we will continue to manage the Diamond Mountain, the Henry Mountains, all those for what we manage them now, from my understanding from him. So they would still be managed for huge bucks.
Right. I don't think you mentioned anything about changing management strategies.
Given that's what I'm saying. Given that, you're not increasing opportunity, because the guy that's got more than 3 points is committed to that unit, whatever unit he wants to kill a big buck on. But he'll put his second choice as the Vernal or whatever, and he may draw that every other year and still hunt, and he's still getting points. So it doesn't change anything except put everything in one to point system, which is fairly complicated. Does that make sense? It doesn't change opportunity at all. The only point he made that will change opportunity is adding hunts. That was a good idea, and we've thought of this as well, taking a percentage of the general season and making a late hunt, you know, 5 to, it can be as many as 100. That will draw people out of the pool and put them into a new place. It will increase odds. The only way to increase odds, to be honest, is to make more permits. And we're not making any more permits unless we have more deer. And you can cut the pie any way you want. It's still going to be a pie. And that's the ultimate thing. I think he had some good ideas, but combining the points isn't going to change a whole lot as far as opportunity goes. Those folks that, if you still maintain your points, if you don't draw your first choice, you know, my first choice is going to be the Henrys. My second choice is going to be whatever general season unit I'm hunting now. So it's the same exact outcome, but with a different process.
Yeah, and I guess we could argue that back and forth, because maybe somebody's going to say, well, I don't want to miss the opportunity to hunt South Slope, so I'm going to put that in as my first choice.
It will be someone who doesn't know the process.
Right.
They'll trip up.
Or they could say, you know, I've got this opportunity.
Someone with
sure
more than 3 points is not going to put in for the South Slope.
For instance, we talked a lot as we made this change about being able to hunt as a family,
mm-hmm.
and we were taking away that opportunity to hunt. Well, now, if I've got 3 points and little Joe's got 4 points, and we say get together and say, well, if we put that in, we're definitely going to draw South Slope, and we can go back to our family hunting again. So it may change a little bit.
We could argue that back and forth. Yeah.
So it may change it a tiny bit, which may give me that opportunity to draw the Henry tag, but that's not what we're talking about. I think that...
You're going around in a circle so much, I'm starting to get...
No, I don't think I am. So I think that we could change... I mean, I don't understand the intricacies of changing the bonus points and the preference points and all of that stuff. That could, like you said, be a nightmare. But, again, I'm not sure I see the downside to what Lance proposed a minute ago.
The downside is the logistics.
Yeah, just the logistics of doing it. Okay. And then second, the question I have for you is, he said we'd change it all price-wise. That was a big concern of his. And I'm if we make everybody $40, I don't know that in the end that changes much because we're getting $5 more here and $200 less here.
I don't think that the price thing is an issue at all. If that's what the public wants, we could do that. The thing is, it all has to go through legislation.
Because it's a,
price,
a law change
all,
when you do prices.
So, you know, I don't... I mean, you have to figure out... You have to run the division, and you have to bring in so much revenue.
Right.
So, basically, as long as it's revenue neutral, we can change the structure any way you want. It won't change a whole lot. I mean, the general guy's going to complain about paying $5 more to subsidize the guy that only puts in for the hundreds. So, there will be a public outcry, I guarantee you. And it will be more than 50% that are against it, against reducing the price of the limited entry and increasing the price of the general season. Because that's what it'll end up being. That's what it'll be perceived at. Because there are more people that have general season than put in for whatever. So it's more social than it is biological or anything
right.
else.
Right, and that's why this system, again, that ring a bell,
mm-hmm.
because we've talked about this
sure.
ad nauseum,
yeah.
this social hunting business, and I think, well, this proposal may make that possible again, where right now our system, it's not perfectly possible.
Yeah, being one that looks at the numbers ad nauseum, it will make almost... You know, maybe a 0.1% difference in drawouts, and because you don't realize the disparity of how many people put in and how many draw and all of that. I look at all that. It really, unless you increase the pool, you're never going to choose.
I understand that for those big,
yeah.
but it does make that social issue that you were just talking about. So Wayne and I want to hunt together, and he's got 3 points, and I've got 4 points. We could say this year we can hunt together.
We could do that on general season now.
Putting together.
You have preference points. You could put points together and draw a unit. I mean, there isn't a general season right now that you can draw the 3 points or 2 points. So it's, you know, it just depends what you want to do. And, that, you know, this will give people, it's just a different system for people to play. And people will find a way around every system you put out there. And it'll be just as hard to draw in the new system as it was in the old system because you don't have more permits out there. The total number of permits didn't change, therefore the draw has not changed. Some people will play it for a while, and yeah, it may benefit whoever knows the system right away, but eventually everybody will learn it, and it'll be back to the old, oh, I wish we would have done this, I wish we should do it like Colorado, we should do it like Nevada. And they all have units that it takes 20 years to draw. So it's just a different way of dividing the pie. And I'm not opposed to any of it, don't get me wrong, but I'm just pointing out that it's really a lot of work and you know, maybe some...
it gives you something to do in the off-season.
Yeah, not me. It won't be me. It'll be the folks in licensing. I assure you right now, if they were here, they'd be pulling their hair out. But I don't worry about things like that because it's not something I deal with. But they talk with people who lose their points or want to move this to that all the time. And, you know, a guy that has, whatever, eight general season deer points and has been buying them just because one day he might want to hunt the season. I don't know why they do it, but there are people who have 8 or 10 general season preference points. To tell them you're going to lose those, you know, because we're going to this new system, is going to be, it'll be a hard transition. And those are the folks you'll hear from at the racks and boards. And unless we can figure out a way to deal with that as well, which, you know.
Okay, I got a couple more questions here, but I got a comment for Lance. Lance, something that I think might be beneficial for you is to put this in writing and try to get some groups behind you to endorse it. And also, because I've taken other letters to the Wildlife Board, and they do look at it. And when you do put something in writing, don't compare Utah to another state. Just put down what you think we need to do in Utah. Because I'm all in favor of something. I'm not in favor of the buck-to-doe ratios right now, because I'm a trophy hunter. I'm But I think we need to. We're going to have to consider everybody. So we got a comment card from Seth Simmons.
Yeah.
We're going to limit this to 3 minutes. Follow our purposes.
It won't take 3 minutes, but he was saying that who puts in where isn't going to matter. Seth Simmons. The guys that want to draw that good tag, they'll put in for those good units, and they'll continue to put in until they draw them. When they nullify out, they'll can start over and start putting in for those good units again. But I know a lot of people just want to hunt every year, and so they'll put in for these units like South Slope, and they'll put in for that for their first choice every year. And right now I know all those guys that are doing that, and they put in for the Buckfest first, and then they put in that other draw, and they draw the tag for up here, whereas they quit putting in for the Buckfest on their first choice, and they get this unit up here, the first draw, and so that would free it up for guys that want to draw that good tag more often. They won't have to compete with those other guys that are putting in now that would just rather go out and shoot a good deer, or go out and shoot a 2-point every year, and they won't be so concerned to put in for those other hard to draw units because they'd rather not. That's all I have.
Okay, thanks. Mike Davis.
My name is Mike Davis, and on this topic, I'm representing myself. I didn't know if this was the proper time to bring this up, but it's Bucks Bowls once in a lifetime. My question is, a non-resident can apply for a moose, a bison, a bighorn sheep, all at the same time. A non-resident has to pick one, or a resident of Utah has to pick one. I think you got it backwards, guys. The residents should be able to put in for every one of them if they want to, and we need to limit the non-residents. I think we're backwards. It's definitely once in a lifetime. My son got lucky. He drew a moose tag before 4 points. Now he gets to go after a mountain goat. I'm not going to live long enough to kill a mountain goat, a bison, and a moose because I can only do one, and it takes 20 years to draw a tag. Again, I just think we have a backwards. I think the residents ought to have the same ability as the non-residents to apply for all once-in-a-lifetime tags instead of just one at a time. That's all I have there.
Okay. That's a good comment.
It is.
I thought about that myself.
So,
what's
the downside to letting the residents apply to all of the once-in-a-lifetime tags?
Because if you triple the amount of people putting in for every single one of those, you're decreasing your odds by two-thirds. You're cutting your chances by that many because that many more people are putting in for it.
But you're increasing your odds by 10.
The reason we have it the way we do now is it does improve odds of draw. If you allow everyone to put in for everything, a tag that used to take 15 years will now take 30 years to draw, and so on and so forth. And we by allowing the non-residents to put in for everything, we've probably made it harder for them to draw non-resident tags. So it didn't benefit them, I guess. So that's why we only did it for non-residents. It's basically, it's almost as a revenue generator because they can put in for month. Each one they put in for is a $10 fee, and their odds are not going to improve for drawing. So for us, it's not a downside. If we did it, it would be a money generator for us. But for the public, it will make it that much harder to draw.
Maybe that specific species.
Yeah.
But if I now can put in for all of the once in a lifetime,
right.
You think all of the once in a lifetime are going to get five times harder?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if I can put in for all of them, everybody can put in for everything.
Sure.
So right now you're only dealing with people that can put in for sheep because they can't put in for anything else. Now, if the elk guy can put in, if the bison guy, and if I could put in for all the species, I would. But it would be that many more people competing with you for your sheep tag or whatever tag you put in for. Because before, they couldn't. Now they can. And it multiplies it.
But I've also got five different choices. Well, it's more than that.
Yeah.
It's not lifetime choices. Mm-hmm. So I multiply my odds, even though they're smaller
odds.
You
think you do.
I multiply my odds, too.
You went into five, but 1,000 came into yours. So, your chances increased 1 in 5, but they decreased one in 1,000 to draw any of them. Believe me, statistically, you just shot yourself in the foot by allowing everybody to. I mean, if you go home and you kind of pencil it out, you'll see how it works. You know, I don't want to belabor it here, but your odds will diminish greatly because there's like, I don't know, 1,000 people putting in for bison, you know, several thousand putting in for sheep. All of those people would come into whatever pool you're into.
Maybe.
I don't know.
It's not
speculation.
Right?
I mean, I've heard
people think they're positive. Yeah. Positive side rather than
the downside. You know, again, I'm just thinking because I get these calls too, and I represent the sportsman, and so is it going to make the sportsman more happy to put in for all of those? So I want to hear the downside.
It will make them happy.
Before I make a suggestion.
It will make them happy for the first 10 years. Yep. But then when they realize they're never going to draw it in their lifetime, they will be disgruntled. So whether we want short-term happiness or long-term happiness.
Well, long-term on the racks anyway, so I like the short-term.
They'll still have your number.
I probably won't be here in 10 years, so go ahead. No, seriously, we've considered it and we've ran the numbers.
I'd like to see, you know, Mike, you put that on paper, and add that up, and statistically, you know, putting in for how many different once in a lifetime species are there? You know, let's say there's five. There might be one. Statistically, being able to put in for five things, even though your odds are 1 in 1,000 times five, as versus 1 in 550 times five.
Right.
I wonder which one really
is. They're 1 in 1,000 times one. Now they're 1 in 6,000 times five. Right.
So if that's truly what it is,
it will likely be. I mean, I can run the numbers and send them to you and tell you what.
I'd like to see it so I could answer Mike when he calls me and say,
you know, all of my odds are online.
That
you
changes
your odds stuff if you want.
That'd be hard though.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, I could run a quick analysis and tell you if odds will change, and you know, it's almost guaranteed that it'll be harder. For the individual, I guess for the guy who doesn't care which once-in-a-lifetime species, it probably will be close to even. But the guy that really, really wants to draw a desert sheep tag, he's basically
He's really in trouble. Yeah.
Okay, are we satisfied now with bucks and bulls? No matter who made the motion, they can amend it, but I suggest we move on.
So once again, we're at a point where there's some good ideas. And as a public process, those good ideas were heard. Lance made the comment. He feels like we just say, yep, we heard you, now go sit down. And we don't want them to feel that way.
I'm not criticizing the thing that Lance says. But generally, if you have a good idea, if you'll put it on paper, you do some footwork on it, you get some backing on it, this idea will move forward. If you come in here and you vent a little bit here at the RAC meeting, really for us, and we've made suggestions to the DWR before, and a lot of times we get, you know, brushed over. If we have, because we've got to think of as the RAC process as a separate process from the DWR. That's why we just, you know, here, so if anybody wants anything, if they get it on paper, then I can pass it on to the Wildlife Board.
Pardon me?
Yeah,
no.
He does.
I've got some just points, but not the people. But I can't put it on
paper. If you would put it on paper.
Maybe that's why I was more interested, because I had it on paper when I walked in.
Uh-huh.
You'd have been more interested if it was on paper.
It would have proven that, yes, that would have been, and something that we can pass on as a RAC board.
I think more than anything, and correct me if I'm wrong, what the public's hearing right now is, you need to go out, get these groups, get everybody, get the backing, then come to the RAC in an organized force.
Definitely.
Rather than rather than just with a suggestion.
Well, the thing that frustrates me, I've been on the rack longer than any of you, and we year after year we work on improving the quality of the deer hunts in Utah rather than the quantity. And then we have surveys that kind of override the ones that want to work on the quality. But I think if we get groups together that really want to improve the quality of the deer in Utah together as a group, have some representation from the sportsmen, you know, all the groups, then maybe we would be heard more than the surveys that are done that everybody wants to go out and have their weekend out of.
So my last question then, and I keep picking on Lance, but so now Lance has to go back, get Sportsmen for Fish and Wildlife or whatever sportsman group, and get a whole group together, or he said signatures a minute ago, and get that for next year.
Well, things aren't done. Things aren't done. You know, we worked on this year plan last year.
I understand. We
work on it every year. And I don't know how many years we voted an increase in the permit numbers in the northeastern rack and the northeastern region. You know?
It's disheartening for people to come here and they expect, you know, some sort of instant answer, and it's not that we don't want to give it to you guys. It's not that we don't want to say, man, you guys are spot on that, and we want to send it right now. But the problem is, this stuff takes time. I know where the tag along system generated, and the reason I checked on it today is because I submitted that to the division. I did, personally, as my own idea, not through the RAC, but me as a sportsman submitted that, and it went through the leadership team meetings, and it can't go to you guys. But it went through their system, and now it's illegal. And it's not because it's being disregarded; it's because this stuff takes time, guys. It just does. And we hear you, and I swear we're reading your emails and we're going through it. We don't take any of this lightly.
What if Boyd was making comments here? What if Lance has got an idea? What if Lance was to bring to the rat chair this in written form? We've heard his ideals. If he was to bring it to the rat chair before the Wildlife Board meeting, we could take them a letter with a recommendation to the RAC that they address it.
I like
Is
that.
It over?
Absolutely.
Does somebody want to make the motion to that effect? And Lance, would you be willing to do something like that?
I'll make that motion.
So we have a motion from Kurt for Lance to bring to the RAC.
RAC chair.
Right, which represents the rat. The ideals he represented tonight in written form, and we'll take it to the...
Pass it on.
Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Wayne, second it. All those in favor, show of hands. It's unanimous. So you put yourself on the hot seat. Now you got a job.
Okay.
And when you get something like that written up, if you want to run that into the office,
okay.
I come to town quite often and I can pick it up. Yep, let me know. That's kidding me.
And can I suggest that you do exactly like Floyd
Board
said?
Meetings on
why
the
don't
six?
You contact the sportsmen's groups and just hear before you, I mean, you don't have to take their advice, but at least you hear what they say. And maybe even talk to some of their,
every
you
year.
Know, leaders in the area.
Okay, let's move on.
Oh, I didn't know what that happened. Wildlife Board meeting is on the 6th.
Okay. Oh, yeah, I almost forgot that. CWME management plans, Scott. Sorry about that.
Weren't you up there once before?
Good to see you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, staff members. I'm Scott McFarland. I'm the Private Lands Public Wildlife Coordinator for the Division. And tonight I will be presenting the 2013 Buck and Bull CWME Landowner Association recommendations. Before I get into this, it would probably be best if I explain what we receive three different types of applications yearly for CWMEs. First type is a new application, and obviously that's something that is brand new. It's never been a CWME before. A new application could also include a CWME that has changed acreage greater than 34% or changed land ownership greater than 34%. Some of the CWMEs let their applications lapse. If they didn't have a CWME the year before, if they apply again, it has to be applied as a new application. Renewal applications, all the CWMU applications are approved for a three-year period. In the end of that three-year period, they submit a new application. It's called a renewal application. And then there's change applications. There are certain things that require that board action on our change applications, and that's what we've been doing here tonight. Anything that's a season date change, a permit number change, or the permit split for the allocation of the public and private permits requires board action. So for 2013, we received 8 new applications. 2 of those were due to land ownership changes. 1 was because of increased acreage, greater than 34%. 2 did not have CORs or certificate of registrations in 2012, and 3 were brand new applications. 10 CWMUs required renewal, and all 10 of those reapplied for the 2013 to 2015 period. 8 CWMUs submitted change applications requiring DAC and board approval. 4 CWMUs have moose permit reductions requested by the DWR, and 2 of those are split recommendations. And we have 1 discontinued application that are added onto an adjoining CWMU, which would bring the total, if approved, to 120 total CWMUs for the 2013 hunting season. As I said, there's proposed 120 CWMUs statewide, and broken down into regions. The northern region has the lion's share, limit 71. Northeastern has 7. Central region's 13. Southeastern region has 16. And southern region has 13. This makes over 2.1 million acres that are enrolled in the CWMU program, of which 97% of that is all private land. There are 444 private landowners that currently participate in the CWMU program. For the 2013 permit number recommendations, these are broken down into private and public permits. The deer, we have 1,983 private permits, 262 public permits. Management buck permits, which are in the southern region, on one particular CWMU, we have 4 management private permits and 1 public permit for management bucks. On elk, then we have 903 private permits, 137 public permits, pronghorn, 74 private permits, 53 public permits, and moose, statewide, 49 private permits, and 31 public permits, for a total of 3,013 private permits and 484 public permits, which constitute about 14% the public would get of the total permits for me. I'd like to go through the application by region. I'll go through the other regions fairly quickly. We'll spend the most time on the northeast region here. Let's start the northern region. They have 3 new applications. Strawberry Ridge, for example, is one that added acreage and asked for an increase in deer elk deer and elk permits and the division recommended approval of all three of those new applications. The Northern Region renewal applications, it had six renewal applications. They were basically pretty much the same as they had in the previous three-year application period, and the division recommends approval of all six of those also. The change applications for the Northern Region, remind you, these are applications where they change their permit numbers, season dates, or their splits, public-private splits on the CWMU. They had seven of those in the division. Recommends approval of all of those. One of those is requiring an elk variance, is asking for an elk variance request. That's the Deseret CWMU to go to November 20th to deal with bulls that are leaving and doing depredation, and also mixing with elk from out of state. They ask for a two-year season date change also. Northern Region recommended changes. These are the four. These are bull moose permits and a limited entry unit permit, in the Ogden unit. And the reason that the division recommended change is because there is a pretty dramatic change in the number of permits that were allocated to this Ogden unit in the Northern Region. And because it isn't a limited entry unit, they need to take the same percentage reduction as the rest of the limited entry unit took. And the changes we'll be voting on would be all three of these CWMUs are in the first year in 2012 of their three-year unit management plan and application. So we'll be dealing with 2013 and 2014. And all but Bear Springs, they would, in the next 2 years, they would take a four permit decrease, two public and two private, in the next 2 years. Bear Spring would take a two permit decrease, one public and one private on that one. The two of these are split recommendations. The CWU operator on South Canyon and Shark Mountain disagreed with that and wanted to maintain the same number of permits that he had.
Explain that to me. That means he doesn't want the recommendations.
Yeah, he doesn't want to take.
The other guys said they agreed with it.
Yeah, the Broadmouth Bear Spring agreed with the permit reduction, the permit cut. South Canyon disagreed with it. So therefore, it's a split recommendation. So. Okay, the Northeastern Region. This region we had two new applications. Crowfoot and Circle Bar Ranch. The division recommends approval of the Crowfoot CWMU of the Circle Bar Ranch. Recommend denial, and this is because of the CWMU met the technical requirements for the acreage, but because of the configuration and the boundary issues. And if you need to, I'll have the region explain this to you. It did not constitute a good CWMU with real definable boundaries. Central Region applications, we had one new and three renewal applications. Recommend approval of all of those except for the Crab Creek. The division recommends denial of that application on the basis that they submitted an application with information that was incorrect on land ownership. They some misrepresentations on the land ownership on that application. Southern Region had one new and one change application. As I said before at the beginning, if they change their land ownership greater than 34%, it kicks them into it. It makes them apply as a new CWMU. The JB Ranch is it's one of the older CWMUs, and it requires an acreage variance in order to be an elk CWMU. For elk or moose, it has to have a minimum of 10,000 acres. This is a company that was grandfathered into the program years ago, and they've been operating as a deer and elk CWMU under acreage. They didn't. But when they changed their land ownership, we required them to get a variance for that. And there's a process that we go through. It has to go through the division review and the wildlife advisory, the CWMU advisory committee also to make recommendations on that. We had a majority vote from the CWMU advisory committee recommending approval of the variance, and also from the division that was highly recommended. This CWMU has operated very well in the past. It's provided a good hunter experience for both public and private. They've, on the elk particularly, they've participated in the antlerless elk program, where they've really contributed to the management of those elk in that unit. So they require that trade. We recommend approval of that. And Summit Point is just a change of application and increased a couple of pull-out permits. They increased acreage and they qualified for 2 more elk permits. We recommend approval of those. Southern Region applications, we had one new and one renewal. The grazing pasture is the same as the JD Ranch in the Southeastern Region. It changed land ownership. The same people are running it. Basically the same permit numbers. It's an under acreage. Grandfathered CWMU that required the same variance. We went through the same process and the division recommends approval of that variance also. Division and the CWMU advisory committee. The Johnson Mountain Ranch recommend approval of that. And that concludes the recommendations for the CWMU part of the presentation.
Oh, you got our attention. Can you explain to me, can the region explain to me what the issue was with the, was it the crowfoot that was denied?
Circle bar,
that's right.
Yeah, and what I'll do is I'll refer that to Lowell, and it's the CWMU that he was dealing with, and he could probably better explain that.
Okay.
I'm Lowell Markey, I'm a biologist for North Slope, which the CWMU, the circle bar, is over the Manila area. That's the outline of the area. You can see just above Lucerne there is the town of Manila, where it says Lucerne. There's two pieces of property that are tied together. So it's about 5,000 acres on either piece, not quite. So it doesn't meet the 5,000 acre minimum of, with either piece. So they're tied together to meet the minimum. The rule states that the land parcels that adjoin corner to corner shall not be considered contiguous for the purpose of meeting the minimum acreage requirements for the CWMUs, except as specifically authorized by the Wildlife Board. The intent is to establish CWMUs consisting of blocks of land that function well as hunting units. The Wildlife Board may deny a CWMU that meets the technical requirements but does not constitute a good hunting unit. This is the area where the two pieces join together, and the area where it's right above the CA on the canal, it's about 10 acres that is used to tie together the two units. And it's somebody's house, and it's really non-huntable property. So although there is contact between the two units, it's really not a huntable unit right in that area. So it's meeting the letter of the law, but it's not meeting the intent of the rule, as you said. So that was the first part of the portion. Boundaries, the property exhibits enforceable boundaries clearly identifiable to both the public and private hunters. While the two larger pieces probably would work pretty well each as hunting units, as you can see going back, that center portion there, I think I counted and there's 84 corners total on the whole unit, so all that has to be signed and marked, and it could be pretty confusing in that middle section there to hunters that typically hunted that section. Could be a little confusing to them and make it law enforcement difficult. Yeah, let's see, what was it? Put on there, whatever it was. 88 signs. That's just corners. That's not roads, fences, right-of-ways, or anything like that. So. The next portion in the rules, to provide general access, the whole CWM program is to basically give public hunters more opportunity. Currently, the land listed in this application is accessed by a lot of public hunters who obtain permission from the numerous landowners that are currently there. If the CWMU were actually approved, there would be a reduction in the total number of people that would hunt on these areas due to limiting the permits in a general season area and allowing only hunters with CWMU permits. The application is for 10 permits. Right now, there could be 20, 30 people that hunt all that land, so you're actually getting a reduction in the total number.
But that's contingent upon the landowner letting.
What's that?
That's contingent upon the landowner letting.
Correct.
If we tick them off by not approving the CWMU, they may not let anybody hunt.
Well, they are letting people now. So the landowners are still willing. Let me step one ahead here. DWR has been contacted by the landowners in the application itself. And this is what Ben Wolford is. He's the conservation officer in Manila. And he's been contacted by the landowners that are actually proposing or that are in this. I, Ben Wolford, have received many calls from 5 different landowners about the CWMU that Jed Olson wants to put together. At the request of the landholders, their names are being withheld and anonymous because they are afraid of what consequences may arise. Many of those calls are from landowners whose property is part of the required acreages. Those landowners are not in favor of the project, but were willing to be neighborly and allow it to happen. A couple were willing to go with it, but didn't totally understand what the CWMU consisted of and what was required for them as a landowner. Still at this point, many are still confused about the process. There are a couple of landowners who want to pull out but are afraid of the possible consequences. I talked to a landowner and he wants to pull out because every time he talks to Mr. Olson, the story has changed. Along with landowners, I've had several local residents that are hunters upset about their becoming CWMU. Their main complaint is that in the past they had received permission from a certain landowners to hunt the property, but now they will not be allowed. It seems there have been some communication problems between Mr. Olson and the actual landowners. So, the landowners currently allow a lot of the people, the residents in the Manila area, to access the land. They seem confused about the program. Some of them are looking at trying to pull out. They haven't actually formally told us they don't want to be part of it anymore, but there is some concern on the division's part that potentially this is, maybe all the ducks aren't in the row right now, and maybe Mr. Olson can come back in another year or so with a better application.
So it sounds like some of the last efforts feel like they're making themselves from the city.
Yeah, they don't really understand what's involved, I don't think. So. But that's the reason that we're considering denying the
Thank you.
That was
helpful.
Lights back up. They have the bright as they can have. Yes, we will. I've got questions for Jed, but I also got questions. We want to get Jed on these applications. have some questions for Jeff. I guess now would be a good time to... Jeff, would you step up to the mic and state your name?
Go ahead.
State your name.
Jed Olson.
Okay. Question I have is on the Crowfoot.
Uh-huh.
Have you explained to all the landowners there what the CWN constitute and what?
I have. I believe on both units, it takes, I think, for both of them, it needs all the landowners to understand well what the program is for. Obviously, if the CWU for Circle Bar Ranch, I believed it was a good hunting unit. Maybe some of the landowners, after they signed up for it, felt that they kind of lived in the way they were going to let in to hunt. But so I believe that that needs to be, I'm fine with it being denied if the landowners aren't all on. But the Crowfoot consists of the Black Bend Ranch, which I lease, and also the Sloughs and Milt's Beds. And they have all been explained to many times what it consists of.
I just had rumor that somebody withdrew on that. Did Milt withdraw?
No, Milt did not. Milt actually called me recently, probably about 3 weeks ago, and I went up and talked with him again on it, because the general season ended up coming again this year. I talked to him earlier in the year when he signed up for the program, and then I had some other people come and talk to Milt later during the general deer season, and he asked me to come up and re-explain the program to him again, and he was fine.
Do you have to have any signatures on this before you put it in? Like, Jed's making the application. Does he have to have signatures from the landowners before he makes application?
Yes.
That's part of the scout report. That's part of the application. It has to be have a complete list of all the signatures or a copy of the contract, the underlying contract.
That's where I didn't understand when I didn't understand that there was landowners and the other one that
weren't. Have you got signatures from Doug?
I have signatures from Milt and from Doug on that application.
When did you get the signature from Doug?
Earlier, probably would have been, when was the CWU application? Maybe the 10th of August.
August
1st. It would have been in July something.
And he was aware who he was signing.
Uh-huh. Carol Swan and Clint were the ones that took it to him, because that I didn't want to do any program that the landowners weren't totally aware of, and they had these application forms for more than 2-3 months.
Okay, I just talked to that 2 nights ago, and he said that he didn't sign anything, so.
Well,
maybe Cal and Clint took care of it, or?
They had Patricia, I can't remember, is it Patricia Beckett?
Okay, as long as there's a signature there.
Oh, yeah.
Questions from the rack.
Well, you made me real nervous. You made me real nervous.
Well, I live over there, so
fair enough. I completely understand, and that's dicey. That just gets legal and scary.
So you were able to get signature and stuff from Milt Beck?
Oh, yes.
Okay. Because Milt's pretty conservative. Worked with him in the past.
Of course, after I was asked questions, I tried to get a little information, but I could. But I understand that it's primarily the agriculture ground, not the flats, they call it. The CWN would just constitute the agriculture ground right there on the creek, not the flats behind.
I don't understand the question.
The CWM boundary.
Uh-huh.
Okay, on the west boundary would be on the meadows, not the...
It's 100% of the private ground, as if I'm understanding right. It would be all the private ground on Topico, all of the private ground that connects down to the Slough, which would be the Beck Ranch and all of Milt Beck's.
Not all of the Beck Ranch, just the part
just,
of the...
Yeah, just the north of the meadow. It's not the upper part. I think when we talk about that upper part, that's up
flats, the Sage Flats over on Burnt Fork?
I don't know. the part of the VEC grant? No, it's not part of that.
Okay. If you don't have trees and rocks on there, how am I going to do this has the Ellsworth place on it. That's part of the flats.
The way I'm understanding you is the Milt Beck, or whatever Milt Beck owns and leases, is in the CWMU under his signature. The only piece that's not in there would be that piece that the Slaw Ranch owns, which is above Milt Beck's piece. That's not in the CWMU.
I don't see that on the manager.
Can I walk over and try it?
If they're all doing that successfully, right? Mr. Olson, why is it that you want this to be a CWMU?
Why do I want it?
Yeah, why?
To be able to manage deer better.
Is there a problem with the management of the deer in the area now?
There is.
Explain.
The problem is if it's in its own unit, the private landowners and the people who own the ground, for an example, as a general season unit, you have people, I believe, that go over the ground, upon the ground, at that trespassing unit that shoot the deer or whatever. I believe as a unit it would be better, law enforcement would be able to manage it better.
Is there been complaints in that particular area of law enforcement issues?
No, just complaints of people trespassing.
Well, that's gonna be a problem kind of no matter where you go. I'm just trying to find your motivation for turning this in. It seems like a lot of people...
The motivation for me to turn it into a CWMU is to be to grow the deer. I wanted to have it as a trophy unit. So that's the reason why I want to make it into a unit.
To limit access.
What's that?
There's still going to be some access issues because both families have right-of-ways to cross the CWMU unit.
Just to cross to go to ground that's not in the CWMU.
So they'll still be access.
They can still access it. It's not shutting them down.
How are these people going to respond when they realize that their families can no longer hunt there?
They already know that. The reason why they're signing up into the program, it's not limiting them to not hunting the ground. They get a tag through the tags that the CWMU receives. So basically it's benefiting the landowners that sign up for it, because basically they can have a tag for their own unit that they can hunt their private own ground for not only just the general season, but the season that's allowed in the CWMU. So the landowners that I talked to were for the CWMU program and making it a more kind of a better unit for trophy unit and be able to hunt their ground more.
So all landowners involved,
well, before I came over here, I thought they were all in favor until I just realized. I didn't know for the Circle Bar Ranch there was landowners that were not in favor, because obviously they signed up for the program earlier in the year and they had the application for numerous months. Many of them had applications. I kind of think maybe more they thought about it, they thought that maybe it would limit them to less. In some landowners, maybe they let more people in than what the tags would allow them.
On the crowfoot,
you're the lead on both of these proposals. Is that correct?
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
I think there's some ambiguity there. So you're heading off both CWMUs.
I am, and to begin out the year, the Circle Bar Ranch application that I had, that was another issue. Was a lot of the landowners didn't really understand the program. I guess kind of I understand more now. To where I explained it to them, they had applications. These application forms at the CWMU, each one of them had the application form for over 3 months.
Can I have the Cliff Note version of your explanation to them?
What's that?
Can I have the Cliff Note version of your of what you explained to them for the CWMU?
Why I wanted to do a CWMU?
No, what a CWMU is and what the ramifications are for them as landowners.
For landowners, the application form would be basically they'd be putting their ground into a unit to be able to hunt deer as a separate unit in Utah. And basically it gives out 10 tags for the unit. You have to have 5,000 acres continuous acres ground. If you have 5,000 acres of continuous ground, you can turn it into a CWMU program, which means that you have your own special unit, and they give you deer buck permits. One will go out to the public, and then the other buck permits will be in control by the CWMU. So the landowners, or whoever we decide to let use these permits, can come hunt deer on your ground in a two-month, basically, period of a hunting season. So the idea would be to grow bigger deer and to be able to have a unit that you could come in and hunt your own private ground, not during the same time everybody else is out pressurizing the public ground. So basically, I was trying to explain to the landowners that most landowners have lots of wildlife on the property. Now, you can either hate the wildlife that's on your property or try to manage it. And so a lot of property owners don't like to see the deer. They don't want them on their property. But if there is a program out there that could help them work with the wildlife to help them manage their own wildlife on their private property, they would be for it.
Well, many people just like to farm.
Most people just like to farm.
And not outfit. And I think that we've got some more input
not necessarily outfitting.
The table.
They're not necessarily outfitting in that sense. That's why I think I explained to them that the tags, if I was the operator, I would receive the tags, and then I'd distribute the tags. If they wanted one tag for their ground, they would be able to receive one tag. For each landowner that signed up for it, I explained to them that they could have one tag for the unit, and then the remaining tags, then I would be in control of as the operator.
The Crowfoot on the vet color, the representation I got would say was try it for 1 year, see how they like it.
That's kind of the program I went with Kale and them is try the application. They signed up for it. Kale and Clint were very for it. They're the one that actually got them to sign for it. They're the one that explained it to the vets. And so that's what they thought, that they try it for a year and see if the program works well and if they get the best.
It's the son of one of the family that lives there. Another friend. How many landowners was there in the circle plot?
There was a lot. There was Neff's, Donald Powelson, Brian Rensix, Brian Olson's, Ned Brady, Paul Riggs.
How much ground has Daryl and Susan got?
What's that?
How much ground has Daryl and Susan got?
10 acres. That's the parcel that Lowell was talking about that connected the two units, because both of them, in a sense, were not quite 5,000 to meet the requirements. So that's why I thought it made a good hunting unit. It didn't. That area, we didn't want to hunt that 10 acres or that parcel right there. The way I understood the program was, is there some acreage that you could deem not huntable in the unit? So that was my intentions if the unit passed and the landowners were for it. That area right there you could put in the program later, but that's not actual piece of property that's huntable. Because I understood that that's what you could do in the program.
Just to picture this for you, on Jed's rounds on the circle bar, if it met the criteria, I think it'd be great. But just to picture this, it goes from the west end of the valley along the beds, comes down across through more or less the bottom of the valley, across and comes back south. So it comes down into the residential, what would you call rural residential, those houses spotted around. So it's not the typical juniper deer habitat area. It's more or less farm ground, other than the circle bar ranch. They do have a variety of different types. So that's just a...
And I agree with, as far as right now, I don't want to go into a unit as the Circle Bar Ranch unit if there's landowners that are questioning and don't know the whole program. That's not what I want to do. So I am very happy with the Circle Bar Ranch application being denied. I want to work with landowners, and I want to work with the division, and I want it to work well. I believe the Crowfoot CWMU will work very well. So if you don't have any questions.
Comment, Mr. Chairman. I think that Jed's done a really good job in trying to pull this together and get all the landowners involved, and he's done well in trying to put this together.
I kind of put out, this is just my opinion, but as a landowner, the most important thing to you is your land. You work hard farming it, you work hard paying for everything. Everyone who owns land is very important to them, and to have someone come in and try to enroll their program into something that they didn't feel comfortable with, they wouldn't do it. So that's why I feel like it will be a good unit, the Crowfoot one. So that's all I have to say. Let me have any questions.
One more question on that. I was asked by me the other night. On these 9 tags that Jed would give, if you give, you know, one of the families gone, is that a voucher?
It's a voucher, yeah. All of the CWU tags are vouchers.
So except this voucher.
A public position of tags, all the vouchers.
Right. So one of the family members gets a voucher, they can give that voucher to an non-resident.
They can go to whoever. Yeah, they can go to whoever they want to.
Okay,
sell,
but they still have to buy the tag.
Yes.
It's just a voucher.
Yes.
Okay. That was a question I was going to ask you before, but I thought, well, that's a good help. So, any other questions? These are comments. Any questions for the audience? Any questions? Take comments later. Question or comment?
Comment?
Okay. Comments from the right. Okay, I'll start. Comments, the order I got them. Mike Davis?
I don't have a comment on CWMU, but comments for the landowner.
Okay. Mike Musselman, step up to the mic and state your name, please.
I'm Mike Musselman.
We give you 3 minutes.
That's it?
3 minutes.
All right, I'll be quick. I know I'm not a resident. I'm friends with Jed. It's kind of hard for me. I hope we can agree to disagree. I really don't want to see a community wildlife management unit in this area for the simple fact that it's all not bordered by landowners. Probably 3/4 of it's bordered by school trust ground, which I hunt regularly. Every year it seems like I get squeezed into smaller and smaller and smaller areas with more regulations. This is areas that I can hunt now. Jed and I went and looked at boundaries where I can hunt, and I respect his ground. Hopefully he respects where I'm at. But it is, it's just the areas that I can hunt. You know, for a long time, his guy before him posted everything, and I had to go down and figure out who owned what at the county recorder. And I've got with Jed as well to where I can hunt and what's his. But my issue with the Community Wildlife Management Unit that I was with Don Pay when they first started out with public hunting units, I don't like the big open season. And my biggest gripe is because someone, resident, non-resident, has more money or willing to pay more money than I am to harvest these animals. They shouldn't get a big window to do it, harvest the trophy animals out, and then I get what's left over and push back. My other issue that I would really like to address, that I wanted to address for a long time, is that these animals are not to be bought and sold for profit, but they call it a trespass fee, but for each certain animal, cost more. I mean, this goes completely against the grain of why can't, you know, I'm going to sell this deer for $5,000 and this deer for $3,000, and it goes against what we have in our proclamation that big game animals are not to be sold for their parts or for profit. I feel I'm getting really squeezed with these. I was against them from the beginning. Yeah, certain some of them are better than others, but you know they give a percentage to the public. After their high dollar people have wiped out what they want here, you get to come in and hunt this. I have a father that hunts with me. He doesn't necessarily need a 180 class deer. He's happy with a 2-point. I just like to give him the access to still be able to hunt the school trust ground and not to get squeezed out. You know, the problem with granting this in this area, especially up on Milks, a lot of those big trophy buck are on the National Forest ground right above his place. I hunt that regularly, harvested a very nice deer off of this year. With these individuals having such a long season to go in there and wipe them out on the hayfield, I think that one of my issues is I think we overhunt all these animals way too much, and we cater to too many special interest groups. Give them a way to learn to hunt, get it done, and give the poor animals a break. I'm really against all this hunting for profit. One more thing, Floyd, just real quick. I think on all these community wildlife management units and all these cow elk tags and everything that these people are making a ton of money off of, they should be issued a tax number and pay taxes at the state of Utah.
Thanks, Mike.
Can I comment to go on about it? It's super quick.
Sure. You want to get a step up to Mike?
It has, in my opinion, it has nothing to do with squeezing him off a state ground. I didn't include any of the state ground. It's 100% private property, so it's not affecting him as an access point to state ground or anything he would like to hunt on state ground, because it's 100% private property in the CWU.
Deb, I got to make a rebuttal and tell me if I'm wrong.
Okay.
Another picture. All this private ground that he's putting into the CWU is on the base of the mountain. Then on one end, there's some Sitla. Sitla can manage the ground the same as private ground. It's managed a little bit different than state ground, as I've been told. So on this mountain, I've been timbered for years. There's roads on this mountain. So in the past, I don't know how Jed's managed this, but in the past, the hunting club managed it, had an agreement with Sitla through Broadbent, and they drove all over the mountain. Sitla's got the roads blocked off down on the east end of the mountain. There's a road that goes clear to the east end, and it goes all over the Sitla. So the hunter prior to Jed was able to drive all over the Sitla ground along with the private ground in motorized vehicles. Whereas the private sector had to walk in, ride in, or whatever. They couldn't use vehicles. So
he never was permitted with SIP. He just did.
Not Lloyd.
No, I checked with SIP.
He was
not permitted. What are we speaking about here?
Yeah, but I don't know if Jed's, but that's one advantage Jed would have with the CWMUs. He says hunters could drive on a SIP.
But I'm wrong. But Floyd,
am I wrong?
All that state ground isn't on the CMU, so how can he hunt it?
We're not. I don't want to hunt state ground.
Actually, Jed can't hunt because he can't fight.
I don't want to hunt the Sitla ground. I don't want to access that. I just want hunters to hunt the private ground, but I want to enlist.
There's another issue with that. And Jed can attest to it. You don't want bull elk on there so that he can take his clients over on that and hunt bull elk on the people's edge. We've talked about making it walk-in only access. That's something one of my big heartburns is everybody, you know, nobody's supposed to build a drive in there, but because these guys lease a little piece around the bottom, they drive in and access, cook accesses it as well. They drive all over the mountain. And that's something I would like to see addressed. That's one of the big things. Why can they hunt it for 2-3 months and kill the big deer in there? And then when I have to hunt on an 8-day season, I don't have enough. The big deer are gone.
Well, we got to move on.
Yeah.
I think, you know,
it's already been established before what CWM views are for. And setting the window different for this one than any other, you can't do that. That's not the issue.
Do you agree with the big high dollar fees that they charge for this?
There's a lot of things that don't agree with high, yeah. But we have to go along with what.
Well, I made a little difference in our voting up there in the middle of this year. I don't know. It's a little difference in the rap. So.
Hey, any other comment?
Well, now, when we make the motion, we'll make the motion on the whole agenda item.
Just asking this on the air, since the issue is with the circuit bar, it wasn't a little bit of the circuit bar. Just a circuit bar.
Growth that didn't fit. So.
So if you made your motion as presented, that means the circle bar is out, and it's more or less the PWR approves the growth foot. And if there was any issues with landowners, they pulled out that.
Maybe a better.
Yeah. Once this goes through the RAP and board process and it's approved, it's a binding agreement, the CWMU with the state of Utah, and the landowners can't pull out. I mean, that's an issue that's going to have to be dealt with the operator and the landowners because it's a binding agreement.
For 1 year?
For one. Yeah, it has to be for 1 year.
Okay.
This is for the 2013 season.
So if he did not sign that paper, he would need to contact the board before the board meeting, correct?
Yeah,
if one of the landowners did not sign.
Pull the signature out, he didn't need to do that before it was approved by the board. Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
And we'd have to know that.
Quickly, I'm guessing you'd like to know. Oh. I move to accept as presented.
Carrie made the motion.
I second.
Brandon, second it. All in favor? Passing through the medicine. Thank you, Scott. Let's move on to landowner permit number.
Okay, the next portion I'm going to present the Landowner Association voucher recommendations for 2013. I'll just give a brief overview of what Landowner Association is. It's this is an opportunity in a limited entry unit for deer, elk, or pronghorn for landowners to get together as an association. They have to come up with a simple majority of 51, at least 51% of the private lands within that limited entry unit to qualify for an association, which qualifies them for a limited number, a percentage number of the permits that are allocated for that limited entry unit. So in 2013, we had 14 applications received. That's down one from last year. One of the units in the southern region didn't renew. Of these 14, the Division of Wildlife recommends approval of 10 applications as we received them. We have 4 split recommendations on that. The permit numbers, or the voucher numbers that are proposed for the 14 landowner associations for 2013 would be 127 deer vouchers, 3 management bucks. Deer vouchers in the southern region, 77 elk vouchers, and 7 pronghorn vouchers. We have, as I said, we have 4 split recommendations. I don't want the picture to construe that we're butting heads on this. We just haven't come to an agreement. All of these are in the southern region. The Pavant Mountain Landowner Association is bull elk. Landowner Association. They requested 7 permits. They qualify for 5 under the rules for allocation of the permits, and the division recommends 5. And the reason for all of these is because, except for the last one, Indian Peaks, is because the limited entry unit had a reduction in total unit permits, so the landowner associations needed to take a percentage reduction also. The Ponsagant Landowners Wildlife Association is for management buck deer. They requested 4 buck management buck permits. They qualify for 3, and the division recommends 3. South Fork of the Sevier River, they requested 6 buck pronghorn permits. They qualify for 4, and the division recommends 4. The Indian Peaks Landowner Association is a bull elk landowner association. They requested 3, qualified for 3, and the division recommends 3. They just wanted to have them premium limited entry permits, which allows them to hunt all the seasons, and that's not allowed by rule, so we recommend denial of that. So that concludes the Landowner Association recommendations. Thank you.
Questions?
So that, I noticed that you had a mention of management buck tax.
Yes.
On limited entry units. Pardon moi. I'm going to have to back that one up just a little bit. I thought that was against the rules.
No, that it is.
Sorry.
This is something I don't know. Maybe I can have him explain that a lot better than I could. But
it's on the Ponsagant unit, which has management buck tags,
okay.
So they qualify for management.
The Ponsagant, so I had to say we're good.
Everything's different.
Yeah, it's a true story.
The rest of the landowner associations remain the same?
Yeah, they had all agreement. What happens is the biologist meets with the landowner associations. They agree on the number of permits, and if there's a disagreement, that's where this book and recommendations come in.
Questions from the audience? Comments? Comments
from Rat?
Michael?
Carol? Well, I didn't confirm that. What do you guys know?
Yep, you're on the landowner's association.
It's good. Yes.
My name's Michael Carl, and I do the short stuff. So, I have a letter that we've read every year to the Northeastern Regional Advisory Council. I appreciate the time to go through this every year. The Diamond Mountain Landowners Association hereby requests a variance from Laws R657-43-8.36. We have had the Diamond Mountain Limited Entry Unit in existence for 17 years. We have had extremely successful management experiences on the Limited Entry Management Unit for bull elk and buck deer. The Diamond Mountain Landowners Association has maintained a good relationship with your division, the general public hunters, and especially with the individual members of the Diamond Mountain Landowners. We have 157 individual landowners in our association and manage approximately 86,000 acres of feed there. We feel very fortunate that almost every landowner is happy about the association. If the Diamond Mountain Landowners Association allowed one public hunter to access private ground for every private permit we have, we would then have 70% of the total permits on our private ground. The Diamond Mountain Landowners Association members now and in the past have allowed a great number of hunters from the public to access private ground at no cost to the hunter. We have kept a record of those hunters who were allowed access or were provided information and assistance to ensure a quality hunt for them. This variance will allow each landowner or groups of landowners to manage who they allow on their individual land areas. We appreciate the DWR's willingness to work with us. Sincerely, committee.
Is my turn? Can it be my turn? Can I please see the records? I asked for them last year as well.
For what?
The records of your hunters that you've allowed on your land.
That gentleman right there has them, as well as him, I believe. We don't have them finished for this year.
I would like to see them for last year, if possible. Okay. In fact, I requested those last year before the RAC as well when the letter came out the first time, and no one can provide that list to me. And in order to provide this variance, I think that that's a huge deal. We have to be able to see the documentation to provide the variance of who you're letting on your land. All otherwise, 70% of the people and 70% of the tags that we allow on onto your private land, you own 70% of the land. If we're going to provide a variance to you, I need to see documentation that you're holding up your end of the deal.
I think you've misunderstood. We own 35% of the ground, and I suspect we own 70% of the habitat, but not 70% of the tags.
Okay.
We receive 35% of the buck and bull tags, and then a percentage of the cow tags as mitigation tags, because we do want to harvest the cows and control the number of actual elk.
Okay, understand.
So, the rule as it was written by the legislature, however it happened, we predate that by, I don't know how many years, 7, 8, or 9 or something.
And
we've been grandfathered in from the very first. When this was presented to us as a landowner group, I think Gail might be the only one that's still here that was there then, with Walt Donaldson and a few other folks. They came to us because we had 4 what was called posted hunting units then, and there were going to be 11 or 12. They said, let's do the whole unit. It's going to be a nightmare for wherever Tory went and his predecessors. It would be absolutely impossible to manage that many posted hunting or CWMUs now. The only way it would work with 157 different landowners is we get a certain percentage of the tags, and it's like us having 157 brother-in-laws to try to make happy. That's almost impossible, but we've been able to do it so far and take most of the hassle away from these folks. If we had 70, for instance, if we gave 100 bull elk tags, we got 35, and for every one of those, we'd have to take 35 more. We would have 70 on our ground, and we'd only have a third of the ground, which, that, in my way of thinking, wouldn't be fair. So it absolutely would not work the way that this was done. And the way it was explained to me by the folks in Salt Lake when they made that rule, it wasn't intended for us anyway. We have a huge block of land that is somewhat contiguous, not so much because there's a little chop of this and a chop of that, but it's mostly private on top of that mountain, at least a good habitat, in my opinion. So we let on who we can let on. Personally, for me, this year, mine's reasonably well set aside for handicap and females that hunt, but that's only my personal decision. So lots of other folks let a lot of the people on their land, but we have to be able to regulate that because it is private ground.
And I completely understand and agree with you 100% that should be your right, but the variance is based on the fact that you let the general public on a fair amount, or I forget what the exact terminology is in that specific letter, but in order for me to consider that, I need to be able to see that. And at this point, I'm taking your word for it. And when we're making a variance of this size for as many disgruntled hunters as there are that I hear from on the Diamond Mountain, I have to see some documentation. I have to see some paperwork for that. And I don't know, is that submitted to the state annually?
No.
The list of hunters that are allowed on that?
We don't get a list, but the variance is also not based on letting people on. Variance is based on just a request of them being able to let whoever they want to let on onto the property. Where the list came in was where the division approached on the mountain landowners and said that, you know, we do let people on. We want you to know that we do let people on. We do, and we would keep a record of it. Some have done that and some have not. If they're going to use that as a goodwill gesture, they should be keeping the list and providing. But it's not required according to rule.
Where is it you want to go? I mean, you have so many tags. You want? I didn't see the.
He's just requesting a variance to be continued. The same variance we've granted every year.
Yeah, we've done this every year since this thing came about.
So he's not requesting anything new.
And the variance, as I understand it, is rather than going along with what the typical association would have to do is for every private tag allocated, there's one to the public, correct? That's the standard rule. And the variance for them is different. How? What is the number there on the variance? Zero tags for the public are allocated to the Diamond Mountain. Please.
This is in our 657-43-8 for the letter of the entrance landowner permit. It says all landowners who receive vouchers and transfer the vouchers to other hunters must allow those hunters receiving the vouchers access to their private lands for hunting and allow the same number of public hunters with valid permits equal to the number of vouchers transferred access to the landowner association's private land for hunting during appropriate limited entry bull elk, buck deer, or buck pronghorn hunting season, except for provided in subsection 6. And subsection 6 says, landowners who transfer vouchers to other hunters may deny public hunters access to the landowner association's private land for hunting by requesting through the landowner association a variance to subsection 5B, which we just read. It has to be done in writing. Tells how that needs to be done. So that's what he's requesting, is that variance.
So that's what the request is to deny.
Same.
Okay.
So there are zero permits given for your private land, for that landowner association. Zero permits given to the public. And how many vouchers are you receiving as a landowner association?
I'm not sure I understood the first part of your
How
question.
Many vouchers do you receive as a landowner association?
Let's start from that. 35% of whatever these folks get every year.
So of 35%, it's allocated to you to sell or to make profit off of, and not one member of the general public is allocated a tag and given a right to your land. Although we're giving you 35% of allocated tags. Please.
Landowner associations, they don't get public tags, they just get private tags.
Right.
It's not a CWMU.
It's not a CWMU.
Right. I'm just saying, but there's supposed to be one member of the public granted access, and you get to decide who's on and off of there, but we don't have record that you're letting anyone on at this point.
I guess. You don't. We've kept that as a goodwill gesture. When this thing was drafted initially, there was nothing like this. It's been tried to be changed 50 or 100 times. We accepted it at face value the way Walt Donaldson and Steve Planning did it, and it was accepted at Salt Lake every year. We get a little change, we get a little tweak. With 157 people, let's say I sold my deer tag for $100,000. According to this, everyone in the entire private ground sector would have to let one other hunter hunt their ground because I sold my tag. Now that's the way I read it. Can't happen. Won't happen. This thing will die.
Carrie?
So?
I say I've been on the board longer than anybody. This has came about every year?
Every year.
And not once have I ever had anybody from the public complain about it, whether they don't know about the process or...
Floyd, do you hear people complain about Diamond?
No.
Never.
Never in the meeting.
Let's talk prior to the meeting. Let's talk about your constituents that come to you.
Well, I don't live on this side, so I don't know, but...
There's a lot, and that's where I'm at. There's a lot of uproar and upheaval about the Diamond Mountain. It's unfair. That's what I hear over and over and over again. And as I sit here and listen to not only these guys explain it to me, but to you guys explain it to me, if you can show me that you're allowing people with a different last name onto your property to access your land, then by all means, I love the fact that you guys can all work together as a community to make that work. I think that's fantastic. But you can't show me that you're letting the public on.
We don't have to, as part of the rule.
I'm going to work on that.
Okay, go right ahead. That'll be fine. If we want to kill this, I think this is a pretty good place to kill it right here. and there will be ramifications forever, if that's what we want. If we can't control the hunters, and if we can't control the access, I don't want any deer, I don't want any elk. I don't make any money off of them to speak of. When this thing came about, by their numbers, they were sending 2,500 deer hunters and 1,500 elk hunters to a place that's mostly privately held habitat. It couldn't work.
And so we went from 4,000 people having opportunity to hunt a piece of property to, at this point, documentation of...
to a couple, 300, now it's controlled.
Yeah, 200 to 300, it's all.
And you can see documentation. There's even 3 or 4 pages coming in for 13. You don't have 100% of it. They will receive it because some of the landowners don't participate or not good at getting signatures and turning them in. But even for 2012, we have at least 3 pages of signatures.
How many, approximately how many people would you say that was?
I have 5 for mine, and I only have 1,500 acres, so I only have a ton of slice.
So, you're welcome to come by my office and I'll give you a copy of them. What I have, is it 100% of it? No. The public hunters do get tax. They get the other, we get 35%. The public gets the rest.
Sure.
It's not like comment. They're being left totally out. They're getting their share for the public acre.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So what I'm hearing here is this Carrie's plea to the Landowners Association to please give her a list of names. Now, I don't think that that's too much to ask. And I think if you were to bring him by and or give him to your biologist, and he can have a record of him, he can bring him to the meeting. I think that would probably make Carrie happy to be able to see.
It's not about making me happy.
Well, but I think it's important for people to see what you're doing, and I think that's what she's asking.
Absolutely, and that's as per your letter as well. That's as per the wording in your own letter that you send out.
I guess I'd like to see that too, actually.
So I have a thought, though. A comment that was made, and it makes sense to me. If I own 1,500 acres and somebody forces me to allow somebody access to that I don't want access to that, I'm not going to participate in that program.
Absolutely not.
And so if we force them to participate in this program, this opportunity goes away for the 70% that now have an opportunity to hunt a well-managed area. And so if we force that issue, and again, I'm not arguing with getting the list.
I'm just getting your numbers.
But if
numbers.
We force that issue, then 70% of the people right now that can go hunt that public access and have 70% of those tags, those miss this opportunity of a well-managed area because all the landowner association is going to drop out. And it's going to go back to killing all the elk and get rid of all the...
Quiet, maybe.
Yes.
So is there public land that's landlocked by private? I'm not looking
at that. That's the case on every mountain.
There is... It's
not just
a little bit.
Because I wonder if people drop under
somewhere in the land. I don't know what the...
Is there a lot of public land that's
there? There's...
But it's very, very small.
It's tough access. We normally get all men. Like... Some years, you can't even count how many complaints we get from the public as far as the BLM standpoint, because the BLM sections are landlocked and they're gated off. They can't get in. I checked with the office this year. Oddly, I didn't get any reports where previous years we were having that issue. But we're also down the law enforcement officers also. So... I don't know if that's the case, but I've not got any reports this year. There are those issues. That's it.
Issues of people mean that they can't get access to BLM land.
Correct. You have public land.
what they want to do is drive right across my private ground to go hunt that 20 acres right over there and shoot a deer in the elk over there on it and shoot it. And then drive right back across my public land, right? My roads, cut my fence, and all that. And I've been hunting a lot longer than I've owned the ground. So there's just some give and take here. And as far as the big bad landowners walking off the public ground that I know of, I can't name one place that somebody can't walk in at least because there's no road. So
I understand the implications.
I'd be happy personally to help do whatever.
I understand the implications. I do. But I also think sometimes it's that one person that's making a lot of problem for everybody. It might not be everybody in the Landowners Association. It might be that one or two people. Because that's where all the complaints are coming from, is they're directed at those few people. So.
And I can sympathize with where you're at as well, because my guess is there's property up above you that people are cutting across to get to. But I understand where you're coming from. But what I represent is the public, and they're unsatisfied with that as a whole. And if the Landowner Association dissolves and it's locked off and all you have is public access roads and all the private is blocked, I can't tell you that my constituents would be really sad about that or care.
I guess I disagree, because there wouldn't be anything left up there except besides what there was in 1985, and there was one or two points that had holes in there. It's
To clarify, from a standpoint, I spend a lot of time looking at Diamond Mountain maps, and I don't think there's any spot that you can't absolutely not get to if you want to walk. Right. You don't ride your horse.
I believe that.
There's just not roads. You're well acquainted with that, more so than me, but I'm in that map, I don't think there's a spot that I couldn't get to if I wanted to get a campus to.
I think we
agree with
covered this pretty good. I'll make a comment. I think this is a good process to keep everybody in check, to keep everybody working together with the landowners and this board has representation from various different entities, and sometimes I think we got to remind ourselves. We're not working for the public. We're not working for the DWR. We're a group. And so we need to address the private landowners, see their side of it before we make any recommendations. And I think it's a good process to keep everybody in check. Any more comments?
One more comment, if I may. As a past owner of the Diamond Mountain area, you can access the BLM, most of it, you can get around and get onto it without getting permissions and stuff from the other landowners. There is a lot of land up there to hunt, and I've hunted it, and there is access. There's access through private land, and you can get permissions for some of them. It's been a few years. This was about 5 years ago, because I had a tag up there, and you can get across it. There's a lot of ground up there to hunt that's not private, but still BLM.
Hey, I have no more cards up there.
Thank you.
Do I have any more cards up there?
What?
Don't you want to talk about this one? All right.
Again, my name is Mike Davis, and I represent myself, and I don't want to make anyone's landowners mad. But I have 156 landowners on Diamond Mountain, and I had the opportunity to assist my daughter-in-law with an archery elk hunt this year. We did not contact 156 landowners, but we contacted 74 of them in letter by writing, and we got permission for three. We got permission to hunt Don Anderson's 11 acres. We got permission to hunt Matt Rasmussen. Boy, I can't let his name out. Anyway, he let us hunt a little bit of his property right there. It was a great gesture. We were able to hunt some private property. We didn't harvest private property. We ended up harvesting on public land. The greatest issue I have is the private landowners get their vouchers, and then I have to compete with their people that pay to hunt their property on public land. That's the only heartburn I have, is that I'm competing with these. They get the vouchers to hunt private land. They turn around and hunt or they get permission to, or vouchers for public, private property, and I have to hunt with them shoulder to shoulder on public property. That's the only heartburn I have. We did get permission to hunt private property on Diamond Mountain this year. It was very limited, but there were and are private landowners that do allow public access. I can testify to that. I just have heartburn competing with their vouchers on public land.
Okay, thanks, Mike. Sorry, any other comment? Why is this different than any other landowner association? Why should we grant a variance in the other landowner associations? What's the difference?
I'm not sure what the difference would be, but maybe Boyd can talk about this. Like, this one is, does, according to the application, constitutes 100% of the private land to permit the natural defense. So that might be one of the reasons. I don't know.
Yeah, there's a few differences with this one, because one, it does constitute all of the private landowners on that unit. But that's not to say the other landowners' associations, they could ask for this variance as well. They just choose not to. And that's the big difference. The variance is available to anyone who wants to ask for it and prove that. I mean, you're talking 152 landowners. Most of the other ones may have 7, 10, 15, but this one's makes up the largest private.
I think one of the other differences might be also that a lot of the other landowner associations are dealing, some of them are dealing with the volume of permits. I was looking at the permits for this year. Yeah, glasses. They're qualified for 44 buck deer permits and 34 bighorn permits. A lot of them just have, you know, 5 or 10 permits, so it's not that big of an issue to allow 5 or 10 other hunters onto the private land. So that might be one of the reasons also.
And with that, it's a possibility that if they have to allow 44 hunters, that one landowner gets all 44 of those hunters on his land.
That could be a possibility.
Yeah. And I think that's unreasonable to ask.
Right. We've discussed this before. We really don't have an avenue for those hunters, even if the variance wasn't allowed and we had to let one for one. And we don't have that avenue unless they contact the Landowner Association president or something to gain access and to find out who has property in the Landowner Association.
Call for motion.
You know, one more comment, actually. We just finished the Wounded Warrior up on Diamond Mountain, and I know that's a different implication, but I just want to take a minute and just thank all the landowners up there. I mean, the support they were willing to give, and they were just more than graceful as far as letting us on the land, so... I thought that was pretty cool.
Okay.
So a motion at this time would have to include approval of the landowner permit numbers as presented, along with the variance for the Diamond Mountain.
If you want to do it,
I so motion.
Motion.
I'll second it.
Second. All those in favor?
I'm pretty sure you know.
Well, just for the record.
For the record, based on the information provided from the Landowner Association, I cannot make a recommendation for the variance because we are missing information pertinent to that decision.
Motion. Wilson's fast. 3-2.
It's more of a teaser geese.
Okay. We've got one more caller.
Yeah.
What's going on with the agenda, everybody? This time, I want to thank you, Rack Numbers, for being here, for doing this, for putting so much time and effort into this. You have no idea how bad I was sweating it, that we weren't going to have a forum to allow the public to vote on things about what direction you want to go and what direction things that they would like to see. If we didn't, if we hadn't had a forum, all we would have done is taken public input and we'd have been done and been no voting. So I appreciate you guys taking the effort to be here. It takes a lot of your time, and I know that. I just want you to know I appreciate it.
This planned all along, right?
Being adjourned. Thanks everybody for coming.
We should get that list.
Yeah.